The Preston and Steve Daily Podcast is presented by Acme. Acme, fresh foods, local flavors, and the official supermarket of MMR's Preston and Steve Show.
93.3 WMMR, audio on demand, presents the Preston and Steve Show podcast. And now, Preston and Steve's news updates with Kathy Romano.
And today is Thursday, August 27th. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning. In the news this morning, Hurricane Laura pounded the Gulf Coast for hours with ferocious winds, torrential rains, and rising seawater as it roared ashore over southwestern Louisiana near the Texas border early Thursday with a life-threatening Category 4 storm. Authorities ordered coastal residents to evacuate, but not everyone did in an area that was devastated by Rita in 2005. Videos on social media showed Laura's winds battering a skyscraper in Lake Charles, blowing out windows as glass and debris flew to the ground. The Category 4 hurricane can cause damage so catastrophic that power outages may last for months in places, and wide areas could be uninhabitable for weeks or months. The threat of such devastation poses a new disaster relief challenge for a government already straining to deal with the coronavirus pandemic. With more than 290,000 homes and businesses without power in the two states, near-constant lightning provided the only light for some people. The National Hurricane Center said the storm, which intensified rapidly Wednesday before plowing into land with sustained winds of 150 miles per hour, came ashore at 1 a.m. near Cameron, a 400-person community about 30 miles east of the Texas border. Early Thursday, Laura was centered about 15 miles west-northwest of Lake Charles and moving north at 15 miles per hour. Winds had weakened slightly to 130 miles per hour since making landfall. More than 580,000 coastal residents were under orders to flee in the largest evacuation since the coronavirus pandemic began, and many did, filling hotels and sleeping in cars since officials didn't want to open mass shelters and worsen the spread of COVID-19.
I tell you, man, I've never heard them use the phrase. If they have, I hadn't heard it or paid attention, but unsurvivable tidal surge. They've been throwing
that
around.
I saw that.
Yeah. They've had experience, and so they know what can happen, and they see stuff like this, and they're, I think sometimes you have to use that language to get people to get
leave.
Out. Yeah.
I know, but like, they can't open these mass shelters. Like, where are they going? There was like a group or a bunch of people that came here. You know, I don't know if they have family or you know, what had happened. But, where are these poor people? Where are they going to go? I heard the 9-foot storm surge. Like, I mean, that's pretty bad.
Yep. Saying like in downtown.
Terrible. Two women are dead and a teenager is left injured after a car jumped the curb and struck them while they were on their way walking to get takeout food in West Philadelphia Wednesday night. This is also an awful story. It happened at 9:30 in the evening on the 600 block of North 35th Street in the city's Mantua section. Officials said the impact of the crash was so severe it sent one of the victims flying across the street and into the front door of a nearby vacant property. Her body landed in the living room of the home. The 30-year-old woman was pronounced dead at Presbyterian Hospital. A 57-year-old woman was lying on 35th Street. She was transported to the hospital where she was also pronounced dead. Officials said a 14-year-old girl suffered leg injuries and is currently in stable condition at Presbyterian. Police said the 19-year-old female driver stopped nearby. According to investigators, she's being tested for possible DUI. In a video posted to the Reading School District's Facebook page, Superintendent Dr. Khalid Mumin begins by sharing a passage from his favorite poem, The Road Not Taken by Robert Frost. But before he can finish, kid superintendent Jermaine Edwards II steps in with his own message of reassurance in a year that brought us murder hornets and Tiger King, which he says isn't what he thought it was. You got this, the 9-year-old says, while providing his own advice for a successful year. And we have a clip of the little boy.
The past couple of months haven't been easy, huh? A global pandemic, politics, social unrest, Tiger King! Rah! That show is not what I thought it was about. You're on mute! 2020 has been kicking our butts. I can say butts, right? It's okay to feel overwhelmed right now. Or anxious. Or nervous about remote learning. But remember, we're all doing the best we can. And that's all that matters. Kids aren't looking for perfection. We're just looking for you to be present. I know that because I'm a kid.
Yeah. That's great.
By the end, you'll be ready to go back to school yourself. Jermaine's mom, Kristen Boyd Edwards, said the video came together thanks to the work of Lone Cricket Productions and a promise to Jermaine that he would get some Taco Bell for his performance.
That's all it takes.
She also happens to be the communications director for the Reading School District. She decided to put the inspirational video together after the new school year celebration was canceled thanks to the pandemic. The soft-spoken child says, I always want to make other people happy. Like if they're sad or nervous, I just want to make them more happy.
I think these kids it's a natural.
Yeah, and the superintendent, Dr. Khalid Mumin, is a friend of ours. But you can watch the entire video. It's really adorable. It's on PrestonandSteve.com if you want to see it. In sports this morning. The Flyers beat the New York Islanders 4-3 in overtime yesterday afternoon, evening their second round series at one game apiece. The Flyers got out to a 3-0 lead, but the Islanders came back to tie it, including a controversial goal with just under 3 minutes left in the third period. Phil Myers scored the game winner 2 minutes and 41 seconds into the sudden death overtime. Game three is tonight in Toronto, and the puck is set to drop at 7 o'clock. The Milwaukee Bucks' decision to not take the floor for game five of their first round playoff series against the Orlando Magic prompted the NBA to postpone all three games scheduled for yesterday. The NBA said that the three game fives, including the Bucks versus the Magic, the Houston Rockets versus the Oklahoma City Thunder, and the LA Lakers versus the Portland Trail Blazers, would be rescheduled. Milwaukee is about 40 miles north of Kenosha, Wisconsin, the city where 29-year-old Jacob Blake, a black man, was shot 7 times by police on Sunday. Blake was shot as he attempted to enter the driver's side door of his vehicle with 3 children inside. And the Phillies beat the Nationals last night in Washington. Aaron Nola bounced back from the shortest outing of his career to throw 7 strong innings, and the Phillies rallied for a 3-2 win. Bryce Harper delivered the go-ahead RBI single in the 7th to help the Phillies win their 3rd in a row. Nola gave up 2 runs on 5 hits while striking out 8. The series in D.C. wraps up tonight, and Spencer Howard will get the start. Game time is scheduled for 6:37. And that's what I have for you this morning.
All right, thanks a bunch, Kath. And like I said earlier, it's a Thursday morning. We welcome you to it. Majority of the work week, we're getting through that. We have a lot happening today. So hang on for quite a few people that will be joining us. And we're going to start with a big one at about 8:20. Actor James McAvoy.
Love it.
Is going to be getting in touch with us. Yes, he has a charity event. It's a local charity that he is promoting. And we've had a chance to meet him and talk to him before. He's a super nice guy, insanely talented actor. Oh, my God.
I just watched 2 weeks ago The Last King of Scotland.
Oh, my God.
Man, is he good in that.
He is incredible in that. Yeah, and that's a heavy movie. So he'll be on around 8:20. We are also going to have Chris Porter getting in touch with us. He's live streaming from San Francisco on Friday. Is that what's happening?
Yeah, it's a comedy event.
Okay, so we'll talk to him about that. We also have another great actor, William Sadler, joining us. And William, he's been in so many different things, including Shawshank Redemption. He plays Haywood in Shawshank Redemption.
He's in The Green Mile, too, yeah?
He's in the... That's right.
So he's in a lot of Stephen...
The Two Dead Girls, which is a plot line in the book. He's the dad. And you know what he also is, Steve? What was the... there's a Steven Seagal movie. Hard to Kill.
I think it's Hard to Kill. He's the
bad politician.
He's the simpering bad politician.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but he also plays Death in Bill and Ted, the second movie, and he's going to reprise that role in Bill and Ted Face the Music. He's a great actor, so I'm very much looking forward to talking to him.
He's always been one of my favorites.
Yep, and we also have Jim Gaffigan on the show.
Freaking Jim Gaffigan.
So we're star-studded today.
I know.
We will have your chance to win some tickets to see Jim Gaffigan. He's going to be performing this Saturday in Philadelphia. It's a live-in, drive-in. We'll keep an eye on that weather forecast and see how things are going to go. Hopefully that'll be earlier in the day.
We'll see what happens.
For the evening, it'll be good. If not, we'll see what happens. But we'll have a chance to win some tickets to it. And keep in mind, it's the same thing as it was with Bert Kreischer or the Struts. These shows that we've been sponsoring. And it's you, up to 4 people in the car, sitting in there, listening to it on your radio. But you're right there in front of the stage. You can actually order food and beverages
from
your car, merchandise and stuff like that. It's a really cool experience. And Gaffigan's awesome.
Yeah.
So we'll talk to him a little bit later on this morning and also have your opportunity to win some tickets to that show. And then we'll have a grand prize associated with that I think we'll give away tomorrow.
Yes.
It includes an entire year of Hot Pockets.
You know, Nick is a major fan of Hot Pockets.
He is. Yeah. That's where we got the oh no from.
Yeah, there was a shortage or a recall or something. And yeah.
Yeah. All right. So these things and more are taking place today. I'm sure I'm forgetting some stuff, so we'll get to it as we go along. A lot of stuff in the entertainment news. There was a baby brought into the world by celebrities. I'll tell you about that, as well as a stupid question with some giveaways. Stay there. We'll be back in a moment.
Love MMR.
car? Buy some gear. Check out the Rock Shop at WMMR.com. Snazzy.
Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro. Get personalized deals on the products you buy most and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors.
Back with more of the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
All right, so your stupid question this morning, the prize is a $50 Rita's gift card, and we're gonna talk about the peacock.
The peacock. Okay?
So here is a question for you. Peacock refers to the male. Peahen refers to the female. Now, what is the term for the species? All right, not the Latin term, not the scientific term.
Right.
But you have a peacock, a peahen. But if you want to refer to them as non-gender, what is the term that is used for the species?
So when you say peacock, you're always referring to the male
that
of the species. And what is the general term for the species?
Correct. 215-263-WMMR.
I didn't know that.
See if you know the answer. All right, so I have a few birthdays to mention while we're waiting for your call to come in. Thursday, August 27th, we're going to start with one of Casey's favorites, Paul Rubens' birthday.
Hey! Mm-hmm. Yeah!
Now, do me a favor before we just talk about Pee-wee Herman.
All right.
Give me your favorite non-Pee-wee Herman role from Paul Rubens.
Okay.
If you have one.
So the role that he played in Blow is really, really good.
I never saw Blow.
So Blow with Johnny Depp, it's a true story, right?
It's based on a true story. It's actually really good. It's what, like 15 years old now, that movie? 20
it's
years old?
It's pretty old. And so he plays him and Bobcat Goldthwait are both in the movie in roles that you're not normally used to seeing them in. He's really good in that. Also, Steve, I love him in Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
He's really good. He's playing a comedic character. You know what he was really, really good in? He was in Gotham, the TV series, for a while.
Yeah.
And I believe he was related to the Penguin.
Okay.
And but his character was really dark and evil, and it was wild.
Okay. I got to go with Spleen from Mystery Men.
Oh, yeah.
His power was farting. And
he was a slimy, scuzzy bastard. Yep. Yeah.
So, Kath, I know that you're not a fan. You didn't like Pee-wee's Playhouse on Saturday mornings.
No.
I think it was on Netflix. I was watching it, and I obviously had never seen it on like a high definition
right,
TV.
Right, right, right.
It was crazy because you could see the makeup on his collar.
Yeah.
And when I was watching it in high def, I was like, that, you know.
The first time he really took off is when there was that HBO special.
I love that.
Yeah, and it was Phil Hartman was in.
Phil Hartman, yeah.
Like, do you still think it's funny?
Dude, Kathy, Pee-wee's Big Adventure absolutely, hands down, still holds up to this day.
I wasn't sure if it was like something that, like, you know, as a kid.
Pass
you
with time.
Was, yeah.
Once you snapped out of it.
I know I say it all the time, too, whenever we talk about it, but like, I just didn't get it. I did not like it.
It's all right.
Tim Burton made the movie. Danny Elfman did the music. Like, so the movie holds up. I mean, it's a silly movie about, you know, a man child who loses his bike, but like all the actors that play in it are just
won
perfect.
Oscars.
Yeah, they did not. Did they?
No, they did
not all of them.
But they should have. Damn.
We spent way too much time on Paul Rubens.
Paul Rubens is 68 today. So is she's not 68, but she celebrates birthday today. Downtown Julie Brown. Former MTV VJ. Wubble 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 was her catchphrase.
It was the dance show, right?
Club MTV.
Club MTV, I think she was.
Yeah, she's 57. Barbara Bach. Bond Girl, Spy Who Loved Me, Caveman, a movie that Steve and I love.
I love it.
It's cheesy. The effects are goofy, and it's a fun movie.
How can you not love it? And I also love another cheesy movie she's in called Up the Academy.
Oh,
Mad Magazine's Up the Academy.
Yeah, I remember that.
She plays a hot teacher.
Yep. Wife of Ringo Starr. They've been married for a long time. She is 73 today. Chandra Wilson, who is on Grey's Anatomy. Don't know who she is.
Oh, awesome. She was in Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
She was not. No, she's an African-American woman. was not one of the young. I'm fairly certain this is who it is. Not, you know, when Grey's Anatomy started, it was like all these kids that were coming out of the residency or whatever, and she was like, you know, already major
up on the screen. Yeah, I recognize it.
We also have Adrian, the drummer from No Doubt, had a birthday the other day. It's Tony Canal, the bassist of that band. He's a great bass player. He's 50 years old today, and he and Gwen were an item for a long time.
They had a thing.
They split up and managed to keep the band together for a while.
Almost impossible.
Yeah, yeah. But then she changed directions musically and moved on.
Was she supposed to be on tour this summer with No Doubt?
Oh, I don't know. Quite possibly.
This is a big No Doubt fan. Okay.
So do you have the next one here, Case?
I do.
All right. Today's birthday. All birthdays include one of my all-time favorite guitarists, Alex Lifeson of Rush. Celebrates his 67th birthday today.
Gave one of the funniest Rock and Roll Hall of Fame award speeches.
He said nothing but blah, blah, blah the entire time. And he apparently made the decision at within a few minutes before their acceptance. He decided he had a speech and he's like, screw it. I'm just going to get up here and do this goofy thing. And it kind of took on a life of its own. So, great guitar player. Happy birthday, Alex Lifeson.
Kind of looks like a Canadian Kenny Rogers, right?
Yeah, but now he does, yeah. He's grown the facial hair out. Glenn Matlock was the original bassist of the Sex Pistols. And he turns 64 years old.
Sorry, I had no idea that the series Matlock is supposed to be that Glenn, Matlock.
No kidding.
Older as a lawyer in a small country town.
They kind of shot forward in time. And
apparently, if you watch, there are references to the Sex Pistols in the series.
I would have to go back and see that more closely. Happy birthday, Glenn Matlock. Also, Tom Ford, the fashion designer. And apparently he's a director, too.
Yes. Okay. He, what is the movie he directed? It starts off with a whole bunch of plus-size people.
It says a single man. Is that it?
Maybe that's it.
I don't know if that's it or not.
But, people love him, though. Yeah. And the critics love the movies.
I wear Tom Ford perfume.
Do you?
Do you?
Perfume?
Yeah.
It is perfume?
It's perfume. It's leather ombre.
Why?
I think it's unisex. So
you know what? It probably is.
Case. Yeah. Yeah.
But they call it a perfume?
I don't know.
Or parfum.
Well, I didn't buy it in the men's section. Listen, I bought it for my wife. She didn't really care for it. It costs a lot of money. I really like the way it smelled.
I love little discoveries like that.
Yeah, so
like you say her bras feel comfortable,
yeah,
too.
They do. Yeah, well, yeah. I kind of mix it with my other colognes.
What's it called?
Leather ombre.
Ombre leather, yeah.
Ombre leather, yeah.
It's unisex.
It's
you're
unisex.
Good.
When Casey's mom moved in, he started wearing her underwear.
Yeah. No, I didn't start. That was something I've been doing since I was a kid.
Get your facts right, man.
Yeah. I love
ombre
that
leather.
You embrace your femininity. I love it.
Listen, I just like the way it smells, man. Simple as that.
I just like the way it feels.
I just like the way it feels. Mm-hmm. There was a time when as a smoker, I would wear like Bath and Body Works, whatever that spray stuff is.
Oh, the spray, yeah, like the body spray.
Yeah.
To cover the smell of the cigarettes. Yeah.
And so I didn't go like with girly stuff. It was more like whatever.
Yeah.
But my girlfriend at the time ended up buying me like the man version of the body spray, and I hated the way that smelled.
You like the feminine version.
I just like the pleasant like flowery
it interacts
stuff.
With your body chemistry.
Hey,
yeah.
I like the smell.
Yeah.
Don't you find me beautiful?
Here's the deal, guys. I've been wearing it for months, and nobody has even said anything. Like, dude, you smell like a chick.
It's unisex.
It's unisex. It's why.
Yes.
The farts overpower it, so...
Stop it.
I haven't picked
be
up
nice.
On it. I'm sorry.
I've actually never...
I am in no mood for this!
If you actually have a designer smell, I've never noticed it.
So yeah.
I've never thought that you smell unpleasant. Yeah. He's mixing his own at home.
I like his sunglasses.
Tom Ford is 59. And then the last birthday I'm going to mention is the great Aaron Paul of Breaking Bad.
Yes.
Pinkman. Is 41 years old today.
Is he getting his own series?
I don't know.
That was a rumor.
We were supposed to have him in studio. We were going to have a live broadcast in Atlantic City, and he was coming to that.
He had his own Tom Ford fragrance.
Yeah. And then the snow came, or didn't come, but canceled it all.
Yeah, yeah.
I would have loved to have had him in.
I liked that movie. I liked
El Camino?
Yeah.
Oh, that was great.
I thought it was excellent.
Yeah, it was really well done.
Yeah, I need to go back and visit that again.
There's a local birthday here, too, Preston, I thought you wanted to bring up.
Oh, Jimmy Pop.
Yeah.
Nice. Jimmy Pop from the Bloodhound Gang is turning 48 today.
Wow, yeah. I was in Maine with my son a couple of weeks ago, and just sort of under his breath, he was singing the Discovery Channel song. And I was like, you know what that song's about, buddy? And he's like, yeah, it's about the Discovery Channel. I was like, yes, it is.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it's about.
Those guys had kind of, they've had a nice little... place in
pop culture,
I guess is a way to put it. Yeah, so happy birthday, Jimmy Pop. That's cool. All right, let's see if we can get an answer to the stupid question this morning. Peacock refers to the male of the species, peahen, the female of the species. What is the species overall known as? And we will go to Keegan and see if we can get the answer. Hey, Keegan. I heard it. What's up, Keegan?
Good morning. The answer is peafowl.
Peafowl. Oh. That's correct. One moment, sir. We'll get your info, set you up. We have a $50 Rita's gift card, and summer is still on in full force at Rita's. You can head to Rita's for all your favorite delicious frozen treats. It's the summer of yum at Rita's. All right, I tease this, and I'll lead with it. Katy Perry and Orlando Bloom have welcomed their new baby.
Yeah.
A daughter named Daisy Dove Bloom. The couple announced their daughter's arrival via UNICEF. They are both Goodwill ambassadors for the charity and shared a black and white image of their little grasping, of their little, I guess they call the baby a little, their little grasping her daddy's finger while Perry held on to the newborn's wrist. They wrote, "We are floating with love and wonder from the safe and healthy arrival of our daughter. While they did not reveal many details about Daisy Dove's arrival, the new parents pointed out that they were blessed with a peaceful birth, something not everybody gets a chance to experience. They said, but we know we're the lucky ones, and not everyone can have a birthing experience as peaceful as ours was. So I guess she had an easy labor, which is great.
She felt that she was overdue. Was she, in fact, past the due date?
That's a good question. I don't really know, Steve. Communities around the world are still experiencing a shortage of healthcare workers, and every 11 seconds a pregnant woman or newborn dies, mostly from preventable causes. Since COVID-19, many more newborn lives are at risk because of the increased lack of access to water, soap, vaccines, and medicines that prevent diseases. As parents to a newborn, this breaks our hearts as we empathize with struggling parents now more than ever. So they're asking fans to, if they can, donate to UNICEF.
Yep. I used to collect for UNICEF all the time, and I would proudly keep that money.
Yep. Yes. In the little orange box.
Occasionally I would, because I forgot to turn it. But it was no more than, you know, if I collected $2, $3, because people would put pennies in the container.
So they set up a donation page to celebrate the baby's arrival. By supporting them, they wrote, "You are supporting a safe start to life and reimagining a healthier world for every child. The new addition is the first child for her, and the second for him." They got engaged in February of 2019 after being linked romantically back in January of 2016. Bloom also has a 9.5-year-old son named Flynn with his ex-wife Miranda Kerr.
Hey, did they ever find the dog that went missing? I mean, I know they're having a baby, and that's a big story. But you remember it was a big deal. They lost their dog, and they had flyers up all over the place, and he was going on TV to beg people to find this dog.
Yeah, good question.
Maybe the birth of the baby has eclipsed that.
We'll see if we can get a follow-up on that. Speaking of following up, Jamie Lynn Spears is set to play a more significant role in her sister Britney Spears' conservatorship. We were just talking about this the other day. The 29-year-old former Nickelodeon star has been named the trustee of Britney's SJB revocable trust.
You know what this is, Preston? This is basically the pop music equivalent of Godfather.
You're right.
That she is Michael Corleone to Britney's Fredo.
Fredo, you're right. She's smart.
Yeah, I'm smart.
But she was initially the trust.
Oops, I did it again, Michael.
Was initially
Fredo, I love you, but you gotta start playing with your poop. I'm smart.
He did it again. He set Michael up again. Uh-huh. Oops. Oh, my God.
Fredo, you got to stop telling people where I'm going. I'm sorry, Mikey.
So the trust was initially set to protect the pop star and her children's finances. Jamie Lynn has reportedly requested that the court authorize Fidelity Financial Management to serve as a financial advisor and create blocked accounts to hold her 38-year-old sister's assets.
Brittany, you got to stop shaving your head.
The Zoe 101 star will...
When my children play with their toys!
Will ensure These assets and cash will be used for Britney's two children, Sean and Jaden Federline, if the singer was to pass away.
She had big issues with her father being her conservator. So I guess they were able to work out something that was an agreement that everyone was happy with.
So the trust was reportedly created in 2004, 4 years prior to when her conservatorship started in 2008. Her trust pertains to her bank accounts and personal items such as clothes, jewelry, artwork, and furniture. According to reports, it's not clear if it includes the value of intellectual property such as music rights owned by her. Her father, Jamie Spears, and her co-conservator, Andrew Wallett, signed off on Jamie Lynn's request to be named a trustee. In July, Jamie Lynn slammed a fan who had questioned her sister's mental health. She had written on Instagram, "You have no right to assume anything about my sister, and I have no right to speak about her health and personal matters. She is a strong, badass, unstoppable woman, and that's the only thing that is obvious."
Does badassery hold up in court?
Maybe it does. All maybe right. Maybe it's a bold legal strategy.
I intend to present conclusive evidence that she's a badass.
Last week, a judge ruled that Britney's conservatorship will be extended for at least another 6 months following the singer's request to remove her father. Her manager, Jody Montgomery, is currently her temporary conservator, by the way.
I mentioned maybe a week or two ago about how people will go into the comments section in Britney's posts on Instagram and suggest that she do something to indicate whether or not there's something wrong.
Right.
If there's a post from 3 or 4 days ago. No, it's from yesterday. And this person just wrote, "Britney, if you're in danger, wear a Lord Farquaad mask in your next post."
There you go. They're keeping an eye out for her, man.
I'm sure she has one.
Yeah, right? We should send her one.
Yeah.
Steve mentioned this in the trash yesterday. Bella Thorne's fans are ready and willing to pay for access to her. Within 24 hours of debuting her page on OnlyFans, the actress set a record by earning more than $1 million. Within a week, she made $2 million.
That's just astonishing.
Now, if you don't know about it, OnlyFans is a paid subscription platform providing adult and not safe for work content. She is hardly the only boldface named to participate. Rapper Cardi B has also contributed to the site. Thorne announced the launch of her own page on social media August 14th and is using OnlyFans to share personal content, never before seen images and videos for subscribers at $20 a month. Creators receive about 80% of the revenue and can also earn tips. So here's my question about OnlyFans. Yeah, is if you have access to this exclusive stuff, what's to keep you from doing a screen grab and, you know, posting it somewhere?
I suppose nothing. Yeah. I haven't seen stuff like that pop up.
Neither
have
I.
But I guess if you do post that, you'll be kicked off the OnlyFans thing.
I'm curious.
You can pretty much grab anything.
Yeah, because you know what? We had asked our friend Sid Wilder, who's been on the show, and she's a big Instagram model and everything.
She has an OnlyFans
site. She was telling us about it, and I had asked her directly. I'm like, "Are you naked on that?" And she wouldn't answer it. She's like, I only reveal that to people who are on OnlyFans. I'm like, okay, so you're not being naked.
Right.
Because I told her, I went and I searched because I was curious.
Yeah.
Because she keeps posting on social media, "If you want to see more of me, do the OnlyFans thing." So I'm like, all right, she's got to be getting naked. So I did searches. I couldn't find any naked pictures of her. So I'm like, okay.
So
either she's not doing the naked pictures or people are sticking to whatever the rules are.
Right.
Because there would be loads, I would think, of Bella Thorne. Mm-hmm. You know,
I think part of the attraction here with Bella Thorne's thing, too, and the fact that she got $1 million as quickly as she did is she's heavily into porn. I mean, she directed a movie.
Yeah. So we're looking at her pictures on Instagram right now. She doesn't hold much back on there. So she's must be going for it.
There must be recipes and stuff. I'm sure, you know,
maybe
life
we're
hacks.
Not thinking about
how to replace that leaky faucet.
Some of the content that might be there. Yeah.
Scrimshaw.
The movie that she made, she actually earned the Vision Award from Pornhub for her directorial debut of Her and Him. She reportedly plans to use
her. And it was presented before he passed by Bush.
Bush Sr.?
Yeah, Bush Sr.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thor reportedly plans to use her OnlyFans revenue to fund her production company.
Huh.
And will also make donations to charity. She also plans to use the experience as fodder for a film about the site. So she's doing great there.
There you go.
Gigi Hadid is celebrating her pregnancy with a stunning photo shoot on Instagram. The 25-year-old supermodel showed off her blossoming bump in a series of flowing, see-through dresses.
Oh.
The model, who is expecting her first child with Zayn Malik, is spending her quarantine on her family farm in Pennsylvania, which is that out near Lancaster?
I thought it was up by New Hope.
Is it up by New Hope? Okay, maybe it is by New Hope.
So she's out in New Hope right now?
I believe so.
Oh, we should go there.
So she wrote with a smiley face, growing an angel.
How does she know that?
Adding that she was cherishing this time and appreciated all the love and well wishes. She captioned one photo with the date July 26, 2020, which appeared to be the date of the photo shoot. Now, her mother, Yolanda.
Yolanda?
Has previously said the baby is due in September. Thank you.
Channel wasn't turned on.
I'm sorry. That was my fault. Now, her mother, Yolanda.
Yolanda.
Has previously said the baby is due in September.
So there's a strong possibility that Gigi's getting up every day early to listen to us.
I think the word is she's thinking naming the child Preston.
I think so, yeah.
But anyhow, Hadid has been relatively mum on her pregnancy, so fans greeted this shoot with joy, giving it more than 4.6 million likes in 2 hours.
I was ecstatic. Let me ask you something. Wow. And I say this with all deference, and I think it's wonderful. I think the image of the pregnant woman, the expecting woman, is something to celebrate. Has this been done to so much that it's passé at this point?
I've never liked it. You guys know that.
Yeah, so, yeah.
It's so. Not passé for them.
Okay. You know? Right. So it's a very personal thing, right?
Yeah.
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 A very personal public thing.
Yeah, very personal thing on OnlyFans. My OnlyFans maternity account.
Right. Very personal public thing for an Instagram model.
Yes, exactly. So... anyhow,
I want to keep it to myself and my 4.6 million subscribers.
Yes. She's happy.
All right, now Yolanda.
Thank you, Yolanda. Actually, she has 46.8 million followers.
46.
It had 4 million likes in 2 hours.
Oh, my God.
It's unbelievable.
It takes me 3/4 of a week to get 4 million likes.
Doesn't it, though? It takes forever. NBC Universal has lawyered up to investigate former vice chairman Ron Meyer after the mogul was ousted. Citing an affair as his reason for leaving. He reportedly had 1 year remaining on his 5-year contract. NBC Universal hopes to determine if company cash or resources were used during the affair or to aid in his cover-up. Now, this gets interesting. This is why I brought it up.
All right.
When he went public with the affair, he admitted to paying, it says her, in a statement. And now the Hollywood Reporter says that he shelled out $2 million. Previously, the Hollywood Reporter revealed that Charlotte Kirk was the woman in question. The mag also reports that Kirk, this gal, had affairs with multiple executives and that at least one other affair cost an executive his job. Last year, Warner Brothers chief Kevin Sugihara's affair led to his downfall.
So is this kind of the modus operandi of this woman?
I don't know.
Okay, so I'd heard the rumors that that might be the case.
The 27-year-old Kirk reportedly has Asperger's syndrome and may have been promised roles in exchange for sex.
Mm.
An insider said this is the tip of the iceberg.
Actual acting roles or like dinner roles?
Acting roles, I'm guessing.
Okay.
One lawyer who is knowledgeable about the matters involving Kirk said that's the tip of the iceberg. The insider said that Steve Tisch, producer of Forrest Gump and The Equalizer and chairman, co-owner, executive VP of the New York Giants, had an affair with Kirk in 2012.
Wow.
Unlike Meyer and Sugihara, though, he was not married at the time, so... not a big deal.
Matter, yeah.
Kirk is reportedly in a private arbitration battle with Sugihara, another mega producer, Brett Ratner, who also accuses her of extortion in leaked text messages.
So Brett Ratner is the subject of a lot of Me Too stuff.
In which he was apparently attempting to settle matters between Kirk and Sugihara and billionaire James Packer.
Oh, my God.
A lot of people.
What a morass.
A lot of money. And a lot of scandal going on here, so we'll see where this whole thing goes to.
I bet you a number of those high-powered guys have penis cages.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Why not? It's a luxury item.
It is, absolutely.
Hey, we're going to have William Sadler on later on this morning. He was in Bill and... he's been in tons of movies, but the movie he's promoting, he was in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, and he's going to be in Bill and Ted's Face the Music, the follow-up. So I have a story about Keanu Reeves who's talking about Bill and Ted. And he insisted that the slacker duo are not stoners. In an interview with AP Entertainment, Reeves said, "I'd like to get one thing straight. Bill and Ted are not stoners. Let's get that clear." Instead, Reeves argued tongue-in-cheek, "They have a nice outlook on life. They like people and their friendship." He continued revealing a little bit about the plot of the forthcoming sequel. He said, in the course of the film, they're given this Herculean task of saving the universe and time as we know it, and they go into their future selves to, well, I don't want to give you too much away, he said. But for me, one of the most exciting aspects of this Bill and Ted story was getting a chance to play. Last week, it was revealed that Dave Grohl will have a cameo in the upcoming third installment. His cameo has been listed on his own IMDb page, which states that he'll appear as himself.
So what I'm gathering from the trailer is that their daughters are prominent in the movie as well. So the daughters are...
Their actual daughters or the Bill and Ted's characters. Daughters?
Bill and Ted's daughters okay. are very Bill and Ted-esque themselves.
Oh, okay.
And Keanu's got a point. You never saw them smoking weed or anything
they were
like
just,
that.
They were just dudes, yeah.
The new film has been in the works since 2013 and was officially greenlit back in May of 2018. But it is it's happening, and we'll talk to William Sadler in the 9 o'clock hour today. Let's see. I have a bunch of stuff. I'm not going to have time to get to it all.
Go for it.
Let me pick and choose here. Brad Pitt took a private jet to the south of France with German model Nicole Paturewski.
Uh-huh.
And has he... he and his rumored flame wore face coverings and dressed casually. Meanwhile, Brad is still trying to settle his split from Angelina Jolie.
I've got a jet.
While the pair are legally single now.
You want to ride on it?
They still haven't agreed on custody or financial arrangements.
Where do you want to go?
They share 6 children together and parted ways in 2016 after 12 years together.
So when you have your own jet, the Mile High Club is...
You're required.
Part of the deal.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like checking your luggage.
Yep. 3 weeks after revealing his diagnosis of coronavirus on his 60th birthday, The Mask of Zorro star Antonio Banderas says that he is cured. He wrote, after 21 days of disciplinary confinement, I can say now that today I overcame the COVID-19 infection.
I was able to cure myself. He said, with a process known as figging.
Oh, my God.
I don't think that was necessary.
It is a cure of the peoples of Barcelona.
Actually, I have a story that we may get to it later on about how wonderfully figging. Amazing ginger is.
Uh-huh. So curative properties?
No. Shoving it in your butt may cure corona. I don't know.
Before you dismiss figging. Antonio Banderas' figging treatment,
uh-huh.
I think you need to learn more about it.
First, you cut the ginger into acceptable wedges.
He said, I am cured. My thoughts go to those who weren't as fortunate as me and to those who suffered more than I did. And I also wish strength to the ones who are in the middle of the fight. And then, let's see. How about this? 2 more quick stories. Halle Berry has filed a petition to represent herself in the final steps of her ongoing divorce from Olivier Martinez. So that's...
I'd like to be on your legal team.
Oh, my God. Yeah, she wants to represent herself.
What does they say? That the person who represents themselves has a fool for a client?
Why do they do that?
I don't
know. Why would anyone ever do that?
It doesn't make any sense. And it's not like she can't hire a great lawyer.
Yeah. Did she even ever play a lawyer in a
She played
in a movie?
Catwoman. I think that could be working her benefit.
Very cunning.
Yeah,
right,
she can threaten to spray.
Yeah. I will spray this courtroom right now.
She's looking phenomenal these days. Okay, yeah. This is an older picture up on the screen here in the studio when she was with Olivier. But dear God, she looks great.
Both 54-year-olds filed for divorce in October 2015 after 2 years of marriage. And they share Maceo, who is 6 years old. And then one more story. Idris Elba is set to create a boxing school for 7 disadvantaged young people. The experience will be documented on the BBC Two's Idris Elba Fight School. He said, I see history constantly repeating itself and can empathize with these kids. I believe there is a better way to teach people that you don't need knives to protect yourself. It's a proven fact that in urban areas where fight schools open, violent crime drops dramatically, which is why I wanted to do this project, in hope that we can change people's lives. I want this project to be an ongoing presence that will continue to provide support and education for the community for years to come. Is he a boxer?
He is, yeah. Okay. He's actually had a couple of matches. He does very well. He's also in that new Suicide Squad movie that I talked about, the James Gunn movie.
Yeah.
Bloodsport.
Who's Bloodsport? That's who he's playing, Steve.
Oh, is he? Oh,
yeah.
Bloodsport.
In Suicide Squad lore?
Was that the Deadpool, the original?
Because Jean-Claude Van Damme.
No.
Oh.
Hang on. Marvel essentially ripped off DC for the Deadpool character.
Mm-hmm.
And was that Bloodsport?
I'm not sure.
I get lost.
Who would be sure? Craig Leon.
Yeah, I know he would. I get lost in all the characters, but...
I'll tell you what. There is a plethora of characters in this new Suicide Squad movie that I am wholly unfamiliar with.
Hang on a second.
Here. Michael Rooker's playing. He looks like Anna Wintour in whatever character he's playing.
I'm looking at, I think I'm off. I don't think that Bloodsport is the Deadpool guy. All right, anyway.
You're thinking of Frisbee.
That's it.
Yeah, that's
Frisbee.
It.
Frisbee, yep.
He worked for Lex Luthor at one point, so he fought Superman, and here's a pretty ingenious idea. He invented weapons that included bullets made out of kryptonite.
There you go. Mm-hmm. What took him so freaking long? Freaking long.
I knew that was...
Frickin'. Bullets made of kryptonite.
All you gotta do is say frickin', and all of a sudden Charlie comes to throw it.
Frickin' ever.
Yeah. Hang on a sec, Nick. I'm gonna see if anybody on the text messages. No. Nope. All right.
All right.
Let's do the clips. How about that? Hoops is a raunchy animated series that follows a hot-headed basketball coach that tries to rebuild an unsuccessful team. And in this clip, star Jake Johnson discusses the origins of the show's development. Here we go.
This started about 7 years ago. Ben Hoffman, Chris Miller, and Phil Lord came to me for a pilot presentation for MTV. And the pitch of it was, let's just be as loud and crazy as we can and have them pass on it, but have fun in the booth. Years later, Netflix came around and ordered 10. So it felt like, oh, wow, what fun. And so we just then at that point decided, let's throw as many funny people in the cast as we can.
Uh-huh. You thought we were done, huh?
Deathstroke was the character that
Deathstroke,
that they ripped
yes.
off from, right. from DC.
Right, because they look very similar in their costuming.
They have similar names, too.
Yes.
So, Hoops, by the way, is streaming now on Netflix. Sorry about that. All right, here's the next clip. Contestants tackle a giant Plinko-esque board to try and win a multimillion-dollar cash prize in The Wall.
Ooh.
In this clip, host Chris Hardwick explains the super drop element in the game. Here we go.
We decided, how can we get people as much money as possible, like right where the show really should be taking off? And we came up with this thing called the super drop, where we drop all 7 green balls at once. We try to give them as much money as possible. And also just because we're animals, we like watching 7 balls fall down at one time. But then at the end of that round, then we do an evil super drop where we drop 7 red balls to sort of balance it out.
This is special.
The Wall airs tonight at 8 on NBC.
I thought that had to do with a rock star who had fallen on hard times.
There was a version of that. Yes, exactly.
I didn't realize it was
like
a game
having
show.
A mental breakdown.
Yeah,
I remember that.
I didn't realize Plinko was involved.
All right, and there you go. That is what I have in today's entertainment report. Man, do we have a lot going on today.
We do.
We're excited about today's show. The first interview we have is a little over an hour from now. James McAvoy will be on the show. And he's talking about a local charity. It's Give and Go Athletics. So we'll get the details from him. See what's going on in his world as well. Jim Gaffigan on the show, just to name a few, because we got comedians, we got actors, we got a bunch of stuff going on. We're going to take a break. We'll come back and we'll dive deep into it with you. Stay with us. Hey, gang, it's safe to say we've never seen anything quite like 2020.
Challenging, uncertain, unprecedented. Go ahead, pick an adjective, any adjective. We'll wait. We've been through a lot, probably with more to come, but we've stuck together like Philly always does.
It's pretty easy to feel helpless, but there are a few things we can do.
Like social distancing, avoiding large crowds, and wearing a mask when you're out in public.
It might seem like a pain, but it's nothing compared to what some people are dealing with.
So let's do the things we can do while we have to, and we'll get this great city and great country back to normal.
A message from your friends at 93.3 WMMR.
Putting Philly first.
Jim Gaffigan on the show later on this morning. James McAvoy will be joining us in about 1 hour. Very much looking forward to talking to him.
So good.
Chris Porter, the comedian, and William Sadler, the actor, as well, joining us throughout today's show. So stick with us. We have a lot of people to talk to and stuff to talk about. There was an article. BuzzFeed has done this type of thing before, and I get a kick out of these, where they take people who are not Americans commenting on things about our society, our country, that kind of confuse them. In fact, we had a great conversation when we were in London with this pair who have a YouTube channel.
Yes.
And they go through, you know, our differences and our commonalities between Europeans, I guess more Londoners and English people and Americans. And the question we had, what are their names?
I can't remember.
Oh my God.
Super cute couple.
They were so great.
We'll
figure that out.
But that's their whole thing, is that they sort of dissect these, anomalies or things that seem weird to them.
They'll try cuisines and things like that. And we had such a great time with them. And so BuzzFeed has this article called Things Americans Do in Movies and TV Shows That Truly Confuse Non-Americans.
I love this.
And so their questions, meaning do Americans really blah, 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 this type of thing.
All right.
And I will tell you now that the answer is yes, like 95% of these. So keep that in mind. But
All right. But
they're things that they don't quite get or quite a bit different than the way they live lives. So I thought this would be kind of fun to go through. So we'll start with this one. It says, do Americans really grow up with a specific university in mind and call their dream school? Or is that just a movie trope because it's just so bizarre to me?
Huh. Did you have a dream school when you were growing up?
It was to not go to college.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was done after high school.
I had no focus on what college I wanted to go to.
I guess the answer is some do and some don't, because there are people that I know that are, you know, Penn State.
Yes.
All the way.
We will accept no other school. Yeah. Yes. And for many, that's the case. And those people usually become lawyers or neurosurgeons or whatever. Me, no. I knew is I wanted to be in some form of comedy, and that was the thing. But I, you know, yes, I'm going to comedy university.
Right. I wanted to actually, when I was a kid, because my cousin went there, I wanted to go to the University of Tampa Bay.
There you go.
And I didn't go there.
And you did not.
It's Joel and Leah, by the way.
Joel and Leah, that's it. Yeah.
Yes, those are the couple out of England that do this really cool. What's their YouTube channel? Just Joel and Leah?
Yep.
All right, so check them out. They're a lot of fun. They go through stuff like this. All right, here's one that says, do Americans complain about fluorescent lights in real life as much as they do in TV?
I do. I do all the goddamn time. Fluorescent lights hum at a frequency that is very sleep-inducing to me. It just knocks me out.
I don't even hear them.
I don't hear them either. I had a teacher, I remember, that the fluorescent lights in our classroom, I was in probably like fifth grade or something, he used to complain about them all the time. Like, it drove him up a wall. And like,
did he say it would make him tired or sleepy?
No, he just,
that's what they do to me.
He would shut the lights out. Like, we would do class with the lights off.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And in like, so, but to me, like, I never understood that. It does not bother me in any way. Down the hall, Kristen Herman and I share a studio, and there's a fluorescent light in there. She never turns it on. Like, she cannot
have it on.
She hates it.
Huh. Okay.
You remember Joe versus the Volcano? The light.
I was just watching it last weekend. And in the beginning, he feels the life sucking lights from him. All right. Here's another one. It says, do Americans really just go to bars and drink like six shots of whiskey and call it a night? That's how Americans drink on TV, and it's weird as F.
Well, how do they do it?
They go and they spend the day sipping on a pint. I don't know. But I can't remember any real, there's a handful of movies I've seen where they just sit down and they drink hard. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
That I remember.
Yeah. Usually they're depressed. Like,
or they're in Tombstone.
Yeah. I mean, if they're in the movies or TV, if they're doing that, they are, they're like not in a good state of mind, right? They're not
going
there.
You drink to forget.
Yeah. All right. Here's another one. Now, this one I find interesting. It says, why do do Americans actually get fed lunches in schools? I thought this was just a movie thing. Now, I don't know where this person is from. I have no idea where they're from and why that they are asking that question.
So can we do a little exploration on that? Is it common practice? Let's say in England or France, are school lunches a standard thing? You know,
yeah, I'm not really sure,
because that now it even extends past that. Knowing with the coronavirus, and there are some students who rely on schools to provide breakfast as well.
Nick, do me a favor, go back to that page and click on that person's account and see if it indicates where they're from, because that might let us know if they live in a country that doesn't do school lunches.
So while he's doing that, in British schools, children can usually choose between a hot or cold dinner provided by the school or a packed lunch taken from home. So I think it's that they bring lunch with them, whereas like our kids here, they can either bring lunch or they can buy a lunch there.
Right. But it says dinner.
Yeah. It says some children
are entitled to stay around till like six.
Are entitled to a free school dinner, but most children pay for theirs. So like ours is lunch, but they're getting the dinner instead for some reason.
When I went to school, we had school brunches. You remember that? You guys would have to go in on Sunday morning.
No, it's
weird.
My next door neighbor, Karina, is British, and she is one of the things that she doesn't quite understand is how early we eat dinner in the United States.
Yeah.
And I guess as opposed to them eating after, say, 7 o'clock or something like that, sometimes, dude, we'll have dinner at like 4:30.
Do you really?
Yeah.
So,
that's
all right.
Me too.
You too.
Because you and I have the same bedtime. That's why. It's like you got to eat, digest, relax a little bit, and then it's time for bed.
What time are you going to bed?
9.
What time do you go to sleep?
About 9:30.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. So I eat dinner at 6.
Okay.
I eat dinner after the conference call, so like 6:15.
Yeah. So right after the conference call goes.
Yeah.
In fact, when you talk to me, I'm sitting there with a turkey leg in my hand.
Chris is shaking her head. She probably eats at like 10 o'clock.
8. Probably 9. And
she's European.
Yeah.
Well, you're also napping at 6 o'clock, you know?
No, I don't nap.
Every single conference call, you sound like you.
That's Marissa on the conference call.
Korea.
What?
Did I tell you that? No, what's killing me is that all the restaurants now are closing at 10 o'clock.
Yeah, a lot of them.
I have a t-shirt that says rancid on it.
Nick?
So this person that tweeted the Americans getting fed lunches in schools from Australia.
Okay.
The Twitter handle is GothXChewbacca. But a lot of Europeans will go home for lunch.
That's true.
In businesses and at school or whatever. So they'll have a lunch break and they will take lunch at home.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Nick. You are well versed in the ways of the French.
Yeah.
They will take an extended, like almost like an hour and a half, 2 hour break.
Yeah, it's almost like the
Spanish.
The Spanish
siesta player.
What do I need a KSA player for? And the French will have dinner late. You know, the French will have dinner at like 8 or 9, but the Spanish, man, they'll have dinner at like 10, you know?
And
so it's part of it's charming, but Kathy, I'm with you these days. Like, I want to digest and go to bed.
Yeah,
and
I like an early dinner.
Yeah, I've got some friends from Spain, and they're living over here right now, but they, like, forever could not understand how early we eat dinner. Like, they're ready to sit down, you're right, at like 9, 10 o'clock. Like, 9 is even early for them.
Kathy, and then when you start to get into the, like, Boca Raton retirement towns, they're eating dinner at 2.
Yeah, but wait, here's a question for you. Like, what time might they have lunch? Do they have lunch later, or they snacking through the day?
So I mean,
because if I'm eating lunch noon, 1 o'clock, and I don't eat till 8 or 9 in the evening, I'm freaking starving.
Also,
freaking
starving, man. It's because you've been up so early.
Yeah.
So our schedules are to wait that amount of time, you'd be passing out.
But most people have lunch around noon, 1.
Freaking noon.
Right? So that's still a long wait.
But and also, like, their meals. Lunch, I remember going to their house, and their dad would come home for lunch, and, like, he would be home for 2-3 hours in the middle of the day. And
well, that's because Kathy's here.
No, but, like, you know what I'm saying? So I don't know. I guess maybe they're eating a little bit later, but I remember his mom, like, serving what I thought was dinner at, like, it was, like, 7 o'clock, and she put all this stuff on the table. We sat, like, sat around 8, and then, like, nobody got up. You still sat there. And, I mean, we were there until, like, 11 o'clock, and, like, dinner didn't come out till 10. I was like, oh, that wasn't dinner? Like, it was, like...
And you just stayed at the table?
It was pre-dinner?
Two separate meals?
And I mean, and they, like, it was, you know, it was special because we were there, but we were chatting, we were talking. There was a lot of translating going on because the parents didn't speak English. So, I mean, it was very nice. But, I mean, I thought what she put out, I guess, is like an appetizer an hour earlier was dinner. It wasn't.
You know what's also confusing is sometimes dinner in other countries is our lunch and our dinner is their supper.
Do you think that's what this is?
I think so.
What they're talking about when they're saying school dinner, they're talking about. So
I think England is supper. Right. Okay.
All right. I have a caller who used to live in Europe. I'm not sure exactly where. This is Sin. Hey, Sin. How you doing?
Gadzooks.
Gadzooks. All right, Sin, where did you live?
I lived in Finland.
Okay.
But I'm also a Spanish teacher, so I've done the Spain thing and all of that as well. So they're actually kind of different. In Finland, they're a little bit more on an American-type schedule as far as timings on eating. And we did have lunch at school, but we had, like, real food and actual silverware and plates and glasses.
Really?
As opposed to like sandwiches and stuff like that,
pizza,
right?
Pizza
and... Not at all. It was a full-on meal with, like, vegetables and a soup and, like, meats and potatoes and the whole thing.
How long would this last?
Well, it was... Since we ate at school, it was, like, a normal lunchtime kind of thing. We had, I mean, it wasn't like the half hour we give Americans, but
right.
it was a little bit longer, but not tremendously.
Because okay.
we did go back to class, but we also had a morning coffee break and then an afternoon coffee break.
Could you imagine handing out silverware in the school, like knives and forks yeah. and stuff like that? That could
I
be problematic.
I teach high school right now, and I don't even want to think about it.
So, all right, so that more similar. I'm curious, though, but I know, like, as with the French, the meals shift later and dinner routinely. So, Nick, in France would be, like, 7, 8?
In France was 8 or 9. In yeah. Spain was 10.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah. Everything shifted in Spain, and they also have more, like, afternoon coffee breaks. Like, Preston, you were talking about you couldn't wait that long to eat.
Yeah.
Well, for one, you wouldn't be having lunch until about 2 o'clock anyway. It would last at least an hour, if not longer. And then you'll have like a tea or coffee break with some pastries or something in the middle, at like 5 or 6, and then you'd have dinner much later.
Why are we so much fatter here in America?
Because we don't portions. Eat good foods.
Yeah, that yeah. might be it. Yeah,
portions.
Yeah,
portions. Yeah.
All right, Sim, thank you. We appreciate it.
No right. problem.
There's a lot here.
All right, let's go. Come on.
Let's move on to some other ones. These are things that non-Americans see in American movies and television shows that confuse them. So here we go. Here's another one. Do Americans eat s'mores as much as they do? As movies
the
say they do.
In the summertime they
yeah,
do.
Yeah, sure.
Oh,
yeah,
my
yeah.
God, that's so funny.
We did while camping last week. And Ben, I'm sorry, real quick, Preston. Ben came up with an invention, and I'm curious as to whether or not you guys want me to share it at some point. But it might
is
be
it the COVID vaccine?
No.
Oh my God!
No way!
That's amazing.
Why are you sitting on this?
It's second only to okay. a COVID vaccine. Right. But it's a dessert.
Oh, okay.
And I'll tell you. It's not s'mores?
We'll save it for later.
It's s'mores related.
We'll save it for dessert.
All right, let me tell you. I have to say this because the onus is on me to do this. If you have not been turned on, we've mentioned it. I mentioned it on the air before. There's a company called Tuckins. It is a self-contained s'mores on a stick.
Okay.
They're awesome. All right.
If and it's I like s'mores, Casey's yeah. use of peanut butter cups yes. instead of a Reese's
oh
peanut
my God,
butter cups
amazing.
Instead of
so good.
Just regular
now that
chocolate.
We've cured COVID and reinvented the s'mores, yeah. let's move
right.
on.
All right, how about this? Do Americans actually have school mascots, or is that just a movie thing?
Yeah.
Yes, we do. And I guess yeah. maybe some European countries don't have mascots.
Do vocational schools have mascots?
Vocational schools? Probably.
Yeah.
You know, if there's a tech school and they've got a team, yeah.
yeah.
But I love mascots. I think they're fun. Here's another one. Do Americans really chug milk out of the carton, or is it just a TV show thing, Kathy? Is it the milk or out of the carton thing that made you sick?
Both.
Okay.
When I lived alone, I would drink milk out of the carton. If I live with other people, then I pour it in a glass.
I do because I drink 2% milk and my family drinks whole milk.
So you know it's all
so
you.
It's yours.
It's all you. I drink straight up half and half.
Yep.
Oh, God.
Especially when I've been working out. I go back up and take a big swig.
It's right, smart.
This
ice
one goes to the call we took. It said on the screener, it said that she had lived in Europe. And this non-American said, why do Americans in TV shows say, I went to Europe this summer? Like, where in Europe? You know, what?
Yeah,
why
yeah,
not
yeah.
say which country you went to? Because you know why? They're like the size of states. We can bop around and do several countries.
And they're all the same.
Or like maybe they went to a whole bunch of countries. So, you know. Yeah.
There's not much of a difference between Finland and Spain.
Here's another one that says, do Americans actually love British accents as much as they do in the movies?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I do.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I find it to be one of the sexier accents.
Well, there's so many to choose from, too. And Steve, you'll make fun of British accents. The aristocratic one and the Cockney one. And
Yep. I had my Spanish professor in college my freshman year. She was from Spain, but she spoke with an English accent. So it was like a Spanish-English accent,
oh
if you know
God.
Oh, my God. I loved her.
Yeah, there's a bunch of different ones.
I like how you wear perfume.
The Liverpudlian accent. Yeah, there's a bunch of different ones. Here we go. All right. How about this? Do Americans really call their best friend's parents Mr. and Mrs. like they do in the movies? Like, girl sleeps over at her bestie's 3 nights a week, and she still says, hey, Mrs. Williams, when her second mom walks in the house. It depends. There were family friends that we were allowed to call them by their first name, and we were that close with them, so we did. But it depends on how close you are with them.
Well, I would say more often than not, like you're gonna go to Mr. and Mrs. unless told otherwise. You're told it's okay to say first names.
When we grew up with our closest friends and family, and I mean, I'm talking kindergarten. I called them Jerry and Marlene. They weren't
really.
They weren't Mr. and Mrs. Chait. Yeah.
So it was always Mr. and Mrs. And I think if I were to see those same people now, I would still refer to them as Mr. and Mrs. Now, the thing that I do like is I'll get our neighbor's kids who are adorable. They call me Mr. Steve.
That's cool.
That's fun, too.
And Mrs. Claire. So, or Dickweed.
Yeah. But I do like it when a parent will say, no, you can call me, you know, whatever their name is. Right. You can call me Joe if you want to. And I actually had a few friends of my son's who have asked me, is it okay if I call you Preston? I'm like, yeah, it's totally cool.
If they ask, I think it's a courtesy.
But I'm confused. What do they call their best friend's parents?
By their first name.
By their first name? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so, I mean, because they're not indicating that they do. They said their second mom
is the second mom
walks into the house.
No, they're indicating that they're so close.
Why the long
bestie
face?
Stays over there 3 nights a week, and essentially that's her second mom because she's like over there all the time.
Close. I know, but they're not indicating that they say Judy or
yes, they call that's her
this
what they're
saying. This is what it indicates.
No, it says specifically they call all women Judy.
Okay,
no, it means by their first name. It says So. I guess maybe in some European cultures, you just call them, use the first name.
Yeah, I don't like the list. Like, I like Kathy or Miss Kathy.
Okay. My question to Americans, it says, is are cheerleaders in high schools really like the ones in movies and TV shows? Are they really the prettiest, most popular girls that everyone looks up to? Are they mean girls? Because that has always been such a cliche.
That is completely true.
In my experience, yeah, it was the case.
It depends on the school.
In high school,
I think in our high school, the cheerleaders were not the most popular girls. The kick line girls were. They was like the Rockettes that we had, and they would come out and perform during, half times and things like that. And those were the prettiest, most popular schools. That was also 1993, so it may have changed.
Were they part of the marching band?
They were their own entity. There was a marching band, like the flag squad. Yeah, yeah. Those girls existed as well, but the cheerleaders weren't as popular as Kickline.
All right, here's another one from non-Americans who are confused about things they see in American movies and TV shows. Do Americans really have to do physical projects like make a paper volcano or glue a bunch of cardboard or make one of those foam solar systems?
Yes.
And you get graded on that, or is that just in the movies? Yes, you do.
Yeah.
Wait, so what is theirs just all written tests?
No, their things are preparing dinner. That's their big thing. It's all based around food. I would be curious to see if they have to do things like that. Like, we had to do dioramas, and we had to do volcanoes, and we had to do all of that stuff. It was all part of the deal. You learned how to make plaster of Paris. You remember all that crap?
Mm-hmm.
It's part of the deal.
Yep. Yeah.
Is that bereft of any sort of similar project, wherever this person's from?
Yeah, I don't know where they're from, so I guess they it's an anomaly to them. All right, here's one for you.
All right.
And I think that we can agree with the non-Americans on this one. Why do Americans in TV and film just hang up the phone without saying anything when they finish a call? It's true.
Yeah, I agree.
Very rarely will you see a character say goodbye. Very rarely.
Huh. I haven't noticed that.
Oh, yeah.
My cousin does that. That's I just know it's time and she hangs up. Like, there's no goodbye.
I always say goodbye.
So do I.
Yeah. Of course, I do too.
What kind of scumbag doesn't say goodbye?
So, Steve, next handful of movies or shows you're watching,
right,
and there's somebody on the phone, they just hang up.
Well, it's rat because bastards. The person on the other end says goodbye. And so they say goodbye and then hung it up, and that's why that person that you're watching
sometimes
on the screen,
sometimes I will see a shot from one person saying goodbye and then they shoot to the other person, then they just hang up, they don't say goodbye.
Yeah, because the other person already said it.
Yeah, I know. Okay, here's another one. Do Americans really eat peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, or is that just in the movies?
Hell yeah,
we do. Yeah. I love peanut butter and
it's
jelly.
Delicious.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man, I wanted to have a peanut butter jelly sandwich the other night. And I got the peanut butter out, and then I had the reduced sugar one, and then I had a blueberry lime jam that your son made. I was so excited, and I didn't have any mother effing bread. Oh, man. Oh! I was so bummed.
Did you use a spoon?
No, I just... I just put it all back in the fridge, and I ate chips and salsa like a loser.
What the hell's going on in your life?
Dude, I was so disappointed.
Yeah, of course.
I had been I went for a bike ride, all right? So, Steve, I went for a bike ride, and I was like, oh, I'm going to stop at Acme, and I'm going to get an Uncrustable, and I can eat that while I'm riding my bike.
Right.
And then I was like, no, you had this awesome jam at home. You're going to eat a peanut butter and jelly sandwich when you get home.
So you're jazzed. You're riding home. You're salivating. You're drooling out the mouth. You get home. and everything comes crashing
no
down.
No effing bread.
Like the Hindenburg.
I see a film script here.
Absolutely.
I see. I've already submitted.
From Touchstone Pictures, here it is. He dreamt of Uncrustables, but when he got home, he couldn't find a knife. Was that it?
No, it was bread.
Bread.
Yeah. I had a knife.
Unbreadable.
No, there is no, there's no, there's no happy moment.
Resolution.
Oh, yeah. No.
It's just, it ended poorly.
That's like the end of, like, The Mist.
It's just depressing.
Sorry.
Mm-hmm. It's just you sitting in the car blowing your brains out.
All right, here's another observation or question from a non-American about things that happen in American movies and TV shows. Do Americans actually eat bacon with their fingers, or is that just on films and the telly?
Well, how do they eat bacon over there?
That's a good question.
This person, knife and fork?
They're from Wales. This is Barry from
so
Wales.
They're whale people.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, how else? What else? You don't eat bacon with a knife and fork.
No.
You guys are going to get mad at me, but it drives me up a wall when people pick up bacon with their fingers. You can get it on a fork.
No, you can't.
Stop using your fingers. It's disgusting.
It's thin and crispy. It falls apart sometimes when you use a fork.
Do you eat nachos with a fork?
You're gross.
Kathy, do you eat bacon?
God. What's gross?
Casey, no, I do not.
Then shut your hole.
Hang on. What's gross about it?
So what I'm talking about is Jace. Like, I'm like, you can use your fork, honey. He's like, you're supposed to eat bacon with your fingers. I'm like, no, you're not supposed to eat anything with your fingers.
What, you mean like a hot dog?
No, listen,
can't pick up a hot dog?
I get it, but like it does. Pizza? It grosses me out. If I smell food on my hands, like I love pizza, but afterwards, if I immediately.
That's your hands.
You know what?
So what does that mean? Yeah, no kidding. That's what I'm talking about.
You're chiding Jace here.
Preston.
Let the kid eat finger food.
I can't.
She's an idiot.
Just use a fork.
You an idiot. I mean, here's the deal. You're supposed to wash your hands before you eat anyway, so what's the big deal?
She doesn't like it afterwards.
After.
Okay.
Jace has a point.
What if she's actually vomiting?
Okay.
Bacon.
Listen, it's just
it's
smell.
You. And it's a thing you have,
it's
and that's cool. I get it.
I mean, you're going to be mad at me.
You're smelling something you just ate. That was good enough for you to take into your body.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's gross on my fingers.
I love you, Kathy.
I bet you that ports over to sex, too.
All right.
Ew, get it off my fingers.
It was just in your body.
All right. Let's see. How about this? Do Americans actually do those projects and assignments like we see on TV shows and films, like the fake babies? We're getting married to each other and all that stuff.
Did you guys ever have that?
Yeah, yeah.
Where you had to pretend you had, we didn't have it.
Yeah, we had it, but I didn't. I that was in like home ec or something, yeah. I guess, and or I don't know.
I just saw a girl, but she was past high school age and like may have been past college age. So I don't know exactly what it was, but she was carrying around a teddy bear wrapped in a blanket like it was a baby. I saw her sitting in the car. She sat in the car for a little while with the man that she was with. Then they got out of the car. They went into the same store I was in. We were waiting to pick something up and she was holding this teddy bear. But I immediately thought of that. I'm like, I hope it's that.
Right.
Is it like Servant? You watched the series, right? Mm-hmm.
I did. No, but it wasn't like a real, didn't look real life. It was a teddy bear.
Okay.
But a lot of times in those projects, you see the real life looking,
right.
Or baby doll.
Or a bag of flour they were doing for a while.
Or the egg.
I'm going to go to Aaron on the phones because she has a husband who is from Spain and has an interesting observation. Hey, Aaron, good morning.
Good morning, bitches. How are you?
Great, bitch. What's up?
So, my husband's from Spain, and the first time I ever went over there to, like, meet the family and family friends, we go over to a family friend's house, and we sit down at the table for dinner, and the friend goes, "So, Aaron, why do Americans always eat potato salad at funerals?" I was like, "What are you talking about?" He goes, "In the movies, you always have potato salad."
At funerals?
At funerals. I was like, I have no idea what you're talking
about. All right, no, I do.
Everybody at the table was like, yeah.
So after a funeral service, generally there's a luncheon.
Something that is prepared by other people. Yes.
People bring over like a potluck thing.
Right, and it's a standard deal.
And potato salad's a pretty easy thing to bring.
I've had potato salad at post-funeral meals.
Yeah. So, but I've never really noticed it in movies, but I guess
sometimes they will actually fill the coffin with potato salad.
Wow. Yeah. I love potato
salad.
It's just
awesome.
Yeah, thank you, Aaron.
Potato salad is definitely overrated. No doubt.
I love potato salad. Overrated. I prefer macaroni salad by a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
But yeah. Macaroni salad, then potato salad, then coleslaw.
Then toss salad.
No. There's like a fourth one in that.
For me.
No, you go potato first?
Potato, then coleslaw, then macaroni salad. That's me. We all have our own taste.
Yeah. We work with a woman who doesn't want to touch bacon.
Yeah, that's true.
The life is weird.
Yeah. All right, here's one that says, do Americans really go to summer camp, or is it just in the films? Yeah, we go to summer camp. Yeah. Not everybody does.
No, I never did. I never wanted to because it cut into my TV watching.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, here's another one that says, do Americans actually eat pancakes for breakfast every day, or is that just me watching too many TV shows? Now, we do on the weekends. We do pancakes on the weekends.
There are some people who are usually taken out of their house after they expire in a flatbed truck who eat pancakes every morning, but no. We don't, obviously, because of the time we get up. But do you know people who actually have a full breakfast every morning?
No.
Has the classic full breakfast gone the way of the dodo?
Maybe.
We never had that.
Toast, orange juice, cereal?
No. No, that was like special occasions. Like, Easter, Thanksgiving, Christmas.
Right. Or the weekend.
Yeah, or a weekend. You know, maybe before or after Mass, you'd go to a diner and grab breakfast. But no, it was cereal.
Our parents made us. Not like a cooked breakfast. We would have to get up early in order to have breakfast before going to school. And then I started to change in high school when you wanted to sleep in as late as humanly possible before getting to school. But
Mom, it's 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Get up.
All right, here's one. It says, do Americans really just dump money on the table and walk out instead of paying for their meals? Or is this another one of those American TV makes no sense things? No, because we leave tips.
Yeah.
So you can leave money and walk out and you don't have to worry about getting your change.
Tipping can occasionally be perceived as an insult.
It can.
In some European
I had it happen to me a couple of times where they're like, what's this for?
You're better than me?
The difference.
Pasta salad was the other one I was thinking of.
Pasta salad.
Pasta salad.
It's like that's a macaroni salad.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I still love it, though.
Do Americans really refer to their dogs as pooch, or is this a TV thing? No, we call them that. Yeah.
Pooch.
They're pooch.
Yeah. Or lover.
How about this? Do Americans really say knock yourself out?
Yes.
Yes, we
all
do.
All the time.
We don't mean it, though.
Knock yourself out.
What does that... where does that come from?
What's the origin of
that?
Good question. Don't know.
You probably have that. You have that little...
I have a book.
Yeah,
that's got all that stuff. I'll have to dive into that later on. This says, wait, do Americans really care about the week that their birthday is in? Some people do.
Some interest. You know, it used to be a big thing when someone would have a birthday, you would get them they would sell them a collection of newspaper headlines from the day and or week you were born in, mm-hmm. historically.
Oh, wait, I misunderstood what they were saying then. Are you talking about the actual week of your actual birth or... You know, do people celebrate a birth week? Like Marissa was celebrating her birth week last week.
Oh, okay. I misunderstood.
I don't really know. Says, why do Americans really care about the week their birthday is in?
People just like to invent a reason to party, you know?
Mm-hmm. How about this? And I don't understand this. Why do Americans on the TV always have blenders inside their sinks?
Blenders?
Maybe it's being...
I don't know what that means. Washed
garbage disposal? I don't really know.
Stupid European.
Damn foreigner. Do Americans really actually get excited about fireplaces, or is that just TV?
No, they're cool.
I like fireplaces.
Yeah.
And fire pits are even more cool. I like this one. Why do Americans on TV always eat meatloaf? What is even in it?
Meat.
Meatloaf is good.
Yeah. I love meatloaf.
Absolutely. You know what I love, Preston? I love when it's a little overcooked around the edges.
Yeah? You like that kind of crispiness?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you prefer like a tomato sauce-based meatloaf or a gravy sauce-based? Okay.
I prefer the tomato, but I like them both.
You know what I like them both, too? Mm. I spoke out of turn. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm bi-saucel.
Do Americans really have detention in school, or is it just in the TVs, shows, and movies?
Oh, yeah.
Is there not a detention? I assume there's some equivalent. If a kid acts up in school, there's something they can do. Perhaps deny them their two-hour midday dinner.
Kathy, did you ever have detention in school?
Like, in our school?
No, did you personally ever get detention?
I think I could probably count on one hand the amount of times I had detention, and it was probably because I was late.
Yeah. Okay.
I never did.
Tardy. You never got detention? You were a stoner.
I know. But I never got to that level of trouble.
Huh.
You know why? Because my dad was going to kill me. So that's why I didn't do it.
Twice for me.
Yeah?
And they were both fights.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do Americans really dream about having their own reality show? Or is that just in the TV and movies?
These days.
Some people.
Yeah, some people do.
Mm-hmm. And then one last one.
All right.
Then we got to move on. This one says, why do American TV shows have really tall glasses but only fill them halfway. I've never noticed that.
It's funny what they fixate on, though.
Yeah.
Meatloaf and tall glasses.
There was another one asked, why do we have bottled water in the refrigerator? Because most European countries don't bother to.
No, and I love that. That was when I was in Europe, that was a wonderful thing. The water is served at room temperature, which is right in my wheelhouse.
You know, and I actually saw this last night. Why and what kind of champagne is this? And I always see it in TVs and movies, TV shows and movies. It's the champagne bottle that's got, like, the flowers on it, and that's it. There's no words.
It's Pierre Jouet.
There's no words on it.
What is that called?
That's Pierre exactly Jouet.
It's a type of champagne.
Oh.
Yeah.
Never seen that in real life.
It's an actual champagne from Champagne, France, and it's delightful. And
I can't read it. There's no words on it.
There's just flowers on it.
Don't like it.
Well, do it live. F*** it.
It's called what again, Nick?
Pierre Jouet.
Pierre Jouet.
Yeah.
I can't read it. There's no words on it.
I usually get a bottle of it for my birthday. I didn't get one this year.
Oh, who gets it for you usually?
Usually my cousin.
Oh, you know what? Check your email because there's an Amazon gift card.
Is Pierre Jouet a name, I assume?
Okay. It's a name brand. It's just like Veuve Clicquot or Moët et Chandon and that kind of thing. It's French champagne. Yep.
Yeah, that's not the that's not the bottle that I'm...
Is that correct?
That does have flowers on it, but that's not...
Maybe they take the name off because of product placement. They don't want it on their case. I don't know.
Yeah, but I can't read it. There's no words on it.
There's no words on it. No, even the flower designs are different than what I'm used to seeing.
I can't drink it. There's no words on it.
I can't read it. There's no words on it.
All right, one last thing. It says, why do Americans in TV shows like trucks so much?
Because they're awesome.
I guess we have more trucks here than you'll find in most European countries.
I like big trucks. Yeah. Well, they want to go to Digger World.
They have smaller vehicles.
Yes, that too. Small
and small streets. Roads, small people, small meals, small hats.
Thought it was interesting. This is from BuzzFeed. Things Americans do in movies and TV shows that truly confuse non-Americans. BuzzFeed has tons of lists and things like this that are fun to go through. All right, anyhow. We need to take a break. We got a lot going on today. I want to give away some tickets to see Jim Gaffigan live in drive-in this Saturday at Citizens Bank Park for you and three people. It's one carload that you get. Caller number 20, it's yours, 215-263-WMMR. Tickets are on sale now via phillies.com/drive-in. You can go to WMMR.com for more drive-ins, guidelines, and Marissa's five tips to attending these shows. We're going to talk to Jim Gaffigan later this morning around 10 a.m. Yep. And when we return, the Bizarre File after that, James McAvoy on the show. We'll be right back.
Preston and Steve on 93.3 WMMR.
All right, let's get right into this. We have the Bizarre File to get to.
Now, WMMR presents Preston and Steve's Bizarre File.
Brought to you by Robbins Diamonds in tax-free Delaware with thousands of rings and self-serve cases and absolutely no sales tax versus the 8% in Philly. Robbins Delaware Diamonds. Well, a Texas groom was shot in the chest at his own wedding party, and even his new bride is refusing to help investigators.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Don't snitch.
Officers believe the groom, who has not been identified, was blasted after a fight with one of his guests at the celebration in suburban Houston on Thursday night.
Someone didn't get their chicken franchise.
Both the shooter and the injured groom fled the scene, but the newly married man was found bleeding at a house across the street. He was airlifted to a local hospital in critical condition. He was later upgraded to stable condition as expected to survive.
So no description as to what caused this?
Witnesses on the scene have been uncooperative. Police at the house have been detained until we can get their witness. Their people have been detained until we can get their witness statement, said the police. The bride had been seen running in the street screaming, "Where is he? I need to find him," after the shooting. But she's not saying anything.
Well, you know what? You always want to remember your wedding. You want to stand out from the other weddings.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes a shooting is what you need.
Yeah, right in the chest.
Yeah.
A driver faces assault charges after police say he slammed on his brakes and caused a motorcycle to crash on a bridge. The motorcyclist eventually ended up in the Missouri River, though how he ended up in the water remains unclear.
No one's talking.
Timothy Walker was charged with assault and armed criminal action. The motorcyclist, Timothy Perkins, is presumed dead. His body has not been found. Perkins was married to a woman who is dating Walker. So Perkins was the guy on the motorcycle.
Right.
He was married to a woman who is dating the guy in the truck.
So was he pursuing this person?
Yes. Okay. Shortly after midnight Sunday, police say Walker, driving a truck, was being chased by Perkins on the motorcycle. Atop the bridge, police say Walker slammed on his brakes, causing Perkins' motorcycle to slam into the back of his truck.
Truck beats motorcycle.
Yeah, police say evidence from the scene shows Walker then put his truck in reverse and ran over Perkins.
Ooh.
And then continued east from the bridge.
Walker, so they worked it out.
Walker told police that Perkins had waved a gun at him during the chase, and that's why he slammed on his brakes. He denied putting his truck in reverse, though. Walker admitted to leaving the scene of the crash and told police he later threw his cell phone out the window.
Love is a fickle thing, isn't it?
Yes. Police say they found a gun and two different magazines in Perkins' motorcycle.
Hmm.
Fishermen heard someone yell for the help and then saw a body go underwater. So that's pretty Jesus. Messed up, yeah. All right, this is weird. A set of deer antlers was mysteriously left at the scene of a burglary in which nothing was taken on Tuesday night.
Rattlers!
Police are still trying to piece together the mysterious burglary.
My name's Cobretti. I'm going to investigate this crime.
In which a shed was broken into, but nothing was stolen, and an angle grinder and the deer skull with antlers was left behind.
Rattlers!
A wetsuit was removed from the shed, but that was left at the scene. What? How many more random items can we have
here? It's crazy!
Police are hoping that the impressive deer antlers will be recognizable to someone and will assist in their inquiries so they can track where it came from. While coronavirus lockdowns caused many men across the world to grow their hair longer than usual, none compare with Vietnam's, I forgot how you pronounce, Nguyen is a name.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's not Nguyen, but anyhow.
It's Nguyen Nguyen.
Nguyen Van Chien, who has gone almost 80 years without getting his hair cut.
80 years?
The 92-year-old is a proud owner of a 5-meter-long dreadlocks.
15 feet?
Yeah. Owing to his belief in a faith that prescribes leaving untouched what a person is born with. He said, I believe if I cut my hair, I will die.
He's right.
I dare not to change anything, not even combing it. I only nurture it, covering it.
In
a scarf to keep it dry and clean and looking nice, he says. Yeah.
So how does he clean 15 feet of hair?
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, we're looking at it. There's no way this is clean. It probably stinks to high heaven. It's a knotted mess.
I used to know a guy who was a sound guy when Rock Lobster was around, and he would run the sound for the bands there. And I remember one time he had dreads, and I was like, dude, your dreads are awesome. And he goes, oh, thanks. And he reaches into, he had these big baggy pants. He reaches into his pockets. What I didn't realize is like half his hair was in his pocket. He pulls it out and it hits the ground. And I'm like,
Jesus,
how is that even possible?
So a friend of mine used to have, they make like a special, it's almost like a deodorant for your hair, like a treatment that you spray if you have dreads. That's supposed to be like a cleaning agent.
Yeah.
Because they're collecting dirt and stuff.
Yeah, my friend Eric had them. And, if we were ever, like, partying or, you know, had to sleep at somebody's place, sleep it off, he had his pillow with him. I mean, he would just sleep on his dreads.
Wow.
It was nice and soft. My balls. Yeah.
Chien said, I only nurture it, cover it. We already covered that part. He said he worships 9 powers and 7 gods and believes that it was his calling to grow his hair, which he bundles up under an orange turban. He was required to trim it when at school, but left after third grade and decided never to cut, comb, or wash it again. Wow. And it's 15 feet long.
It's just too much work.
They have to be the longest in the world, I would imagine.
So. And I'm the complete opposite.
Yeah. All right. And you know what? We're wrapping up there because we have a guest coming up in a few minutes, and we're excited to talk to James McAvoy. But he's not the only guest on today. Jim Gaffigan is on. Actor William Sadler, who's fantastic, will be joining us. And comedian Chris Porter. So we have a bunch to get to. Oh, and there's another thing taking place. It's in our parking lot in Bala Cynwyd, going on right now until noon. If you stop by, you can get a free flyers anytime, anywhere, Lawn John yard sign to help get set and or not set for, but to help promote the playoffs and your Flyers pride.
I didn't know this.
Yeah, so this is going on right now here at One Bala Plaza. Stop by; they are free while they last. It's courtesy of our sister station, 97.5 The Fanatic, and they are set up in our West Lobby parking lot area, and they're handing them out. You can catch Flyers game at 3 today. at 7 tonight at on the Fanatic. So, yeah, if you want one of these anytime, anywhere, it says Lawn John. It's a yard sign.
Yeah.
And it's a Flyers yard sign. Come by and get it, man. Why not? It's yet just a free, another free thing you can snag.
Yeah.
From our company. So that's going on till only noon. So you got some time. We're going to take a break. We'll come back. And when we return, yes, James McAvoy on our show. Stay with us.
Listen to all the WMMR podcasts as well as a live stream on your Alexa-enabled device. Just say, Alexa, open MMR.
Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro. Get personalized deals on the products you buy most and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors. Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro. Get personalized deals on the products you buy most and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors.
Back with more of the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
I would say that outside of our studio, the place where we have met the most famous people has been at M. Night Shyamalan's Halloween party.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's always a star-studded event, and we met this gentleman there a few years ago, although I was hammered out of my gourd, which is what you do at that party.
Seriously.
Because Knight is pushing the shots on you while you're there.
They actually encourage it.
Yes, and God bless him. But we're excited to have him on this morning. He's calling in from London and is here to talk about a charity organization that is right here in Philadelphia. It's a very, very cool thing. It's called Give and Go Athletics, and we're going to ask him more about it. Please welcome James McAvoy.
Hey!
The program. Hey, James, how you doing, man?
I'm doing real good, guys. Thanks for having me on.
No, hey, no problem, man. And you really have embraced Philadelphia, have you not?
Yeah, you know, I've got such a lot of good friends there. I've had great work there, and I've got a home there. I regard it as a second home. My partner is from Delco, and you know, we try to get back as much as we can. So no, it's very much a second home for me.
You just said Delco.
You said Delco,
and you made our producer.
I'm the unofficial mayor of Delco.
He was just throwing his fist up in the air.
It was his greatest realization that James McAvoy's a Delco guy.
I mean, 2 days in a row, I was wearing Delco t-shirts. So you know.
I've actually got a really cool little Delco baseball cap, which I wear, and people are like, "What's Delco?" I'm like, oh, it's a little place in Pennsylvania, just outside Philly. And they're like, uh-huh.
Yeah. You keep it enigmatic. We like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But listen, we'll talk a little bit about your, you know, some professional things. But let's talk about Give and Go Athletics. I was just watching you on with Jimmy Fallon not that long ago talking about this. So this is something you really like to spread the word on.
Yeah, we were looking for ways to sort of support the community during such a tough time during the lockdown, and we're looking to do that in, you know, different places, but definitely in places that we regard as our home, places that are surrounded by people that we love, care about, our families and friends, you know. Mm-hmm. And we heard about Give and Go Athletics through a very good friend of ours called Ricky Staub, who's a director who actually also runs an amazing organization called Neighborhood Film that works with homeless people and trains them up in the film business. But he told us about Give and Go Athletics. Basically, it was run by these guys, Andre and Caleb, two incredible men. That grew up in the same part of North Philly, but on opposite sides of the gang line, so they didn't really meet, even though they lived literally streets apart from each other. They both go off to college, become collegiate athletes, and they study behavioral health therapy. When they come back to Philly, they meet for the first time and find that they've, you know, they lived streets apart, they were on different sides of the gang line, but they both studied in the same kind of behavioral therapy and things. When they come back to Philly, it's around about the same time that Pennsylvania sort of stopped, or North Philly anyway, stopped all extracurricular sporting activities in high schools and lower schools. And of course, that's a massive problem. It's a massive issue, and it leaves a huge gap that needs to be filled by parents or aunties and uncles or after-school organizations, and they're just not there. So in step, Caleb and Andre, these two incredible people, and they provided all these after-school sporting activities and events, but at the same time, they deliver trauma-based therapy, which is massively in need for a lot of the children, not all, but a lot of the children that take part in these events and that go to schools in that particular area of North Philly that was getting no help or no funding for those vital activities that, you know, expand minds, keep you out of the house, maybe keep you out of a dangerous situation at home, all those kind of things. And these guys deliver not just sporting therapy and food for the body, but also food for the soul and trauma-based therapy as well. They're an incredible bunch of people. And if can I plug their website?
Please, yes, absolutely.
They're an incredible bunch of people. It's not just Caleb and Andre. It has grown a little bit, but it does cost money, and we're funding it. We're helping to fund it. Not funding it, sorry. We are helping to fund it. But anything you can give is fantastic. If you can become a monthly donor, it's even better. But you want to go to givinggoathletics.org, and the first thing you'll see is a thing that says get involved. And you just hit that, and it shows you how to give a one-off donation or become a monthly donor and all that. And if you can give, fantastic. We realize it's tough times at the moment, so if you can't give, just go and take a look at the thing, because they're special, special people, you know?
Well, there's good news to be had, because, you know, we found that as we've done a few things and a few charity drives, we had a blood drive just last Friday, the generosity, as you know, of this area, and as you're an adopted son of this area, is astonishing. So people will rise to the challenge. And when you talk about the critical nature of these kind of programs, these grassroots programs, these things are the things that get done. There are so many people who tell you, whether they be politicians or whatever, that they're looking out for you and they want to, you know, blah, blah. And it never seems to trickle down. This is what motivated Night Shyamalan to start his foundation. Put it in the hands of the people who can really activate and get things done. And I think now, because of isolation and kids not being able to socialize and do those, as you said, very important, essential things, this is something that is desperately needed. So it couldn't come at a better time.
Nah, you're so right. You're so right. And also, you know, not every teacher is that special teacher, but when you get those special leaders and those special mentors and those special people that resonate with you, they can change your entire life, you know what I mean? And look, Caleb and Andre aren't going to be that person for every kid, but they're going to be that person for a lot of those kids, you know?
Yeah, and that's all part of the deal. I mean, you know, Preston talks about, from a music program in school, a lot of times music programs are cut, and how essential that is. These things, they allow you to start to build those foundational things that turn you into, you know, hopefully happy, well-socialized adults. Yeah. And when you extract that, it has an impact.
Yeah, I came from. I don't know what you guys call it. We call it a council estate. I think you guys call it a project back in Scotland. And it wasn't a particularly great area. I think I was a good kid, but I didn't really have amazing prospects. But I had two incredible music teachers who went out of their way to provide, out of the kindness of their own heart and their own pockets at times, extracurricular music activity for me and anybody that wanted to come. And it changed my life. Mm. And not just, like, I don't play music now. I haven't picked up a bass guitar since I was about 18 years old. But they opened my eyes. They made me realize that it was okay to be myself, to not have to conform to some tough sort of council estate born attitude and do all the things that go along with that. Do you know what I mean? They taught me that I could be myself, that I could express myself, and that it was okay to be sensitive and artistic. If it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be an actor, but if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be as well adjusted as human being. Yeah. And I feel that Caleb and Andre are filling that gap that is massive and needs to be filled in North Philly.
So in addition to donating, there is, it says, a quick ball clinic this Saturday from 9:30 a.m. to 12:30. And it's at a baseball field at 26th and Master. Are you familiar with that and what's going on there?
No, they've not told me about that.
Okay.
I'm not up to date with the day-to-day goings on Give and Go at the moment.
Hey, I have a question. You know, you mentioned, James, music being a part of your teenage, your formative years. Did you drop the music and move to acting in like one move, or did it come a little bit later on?
It was pretty much in one move. I was about 16 years old. I had no drama training or acting training, but I somehow managed to get an audition for a movie because a director came into our school, gave us a chat on what it was like to be in Macbeth. We were reading Macbeth in English at the time. And he was an actor, so he played Lady Macbeth in an all-male production back in the 70s, I think.
That's how they used to do it, yeah.
And I said to him, listen, that was great. Thank you very much. If you're making another movie, can I come and be your tea boy for like a week, make, you know, do run coffee and stuff like that?
Yeah.
And anyway, he called back like 5 or 6 months later and he actually offered me an audition. I got the part. And then from there, I didn't really do much acting after that. But when I was 18 and I was leaving high school, I auditioned for drama school. For acting school, and luckily got in. I don't think I picked up a musical instrument for 3 years after that.
Wow.
Because acting school was just a little bit like you go in at 8 in the morning and you come out at 10 o'clock at night, and you it's probably the most professional environment I've ever experienced in the industry.
Yeah.
So that was sort of the end of my musical education at 18.
Did any of your friends, any of your tough neighborhood friends, bust your balls a little bit about wanting to delve into acting? And if so, did they ever come back and say, I'm sorry about that?
No, do you know what? Wanting to be an actor, that's the weird thing, though. You can sometimes live, maybe you come from a neighborhood that you think is tough, or maybe you think people are going to give you a hard time. And yes, by the way, that often can happen. You can get a hard time. Mm-hmm. But I think the fear and the oppression or the inhibition that we feel sometimes comes from ourselves as well. You know what I mean? It may be that your neighbor who you thought was going to beat you up because you wanted to be an actor and they thought it was silly or something.
James. Oh, yeah. By the way, the S bomb and the F bomb we can't say on American radio. Yes. So
I'm so sorry.
It's okay. It's all good. I wish we could. It'd be great.
No, but it does. And you're actually talking about something that is sort of pertains to everything that we've been talking about up to now, which is that point in which you realize that there are opportunities for you. And when the switch is flicked and you're like, oh my God, this could be something for me. And this is an avenue I had not thought about. You talk about where you came from and where you were living. Everything.
I think, look, we don't always have the money to get out of our limited borders. Do you know what I mean? We don't always have the money to physically take ourselves beyond our immediate horizons. And that can be limiting. And sometimes the confines of our immediate horizons are terrible and not helpful, not educational, and not good for cultivating a good human being, right? But you meet incredible people. You meet incredible mentors, teachers, and this is what education does. It helps you see beyond your physical barriers, and it helps you see, all right, I can't get out of this situation right now, but I can see beyond it, and I can learn about stuff beyond it. I can project, I can imagine, and I can become a bigger soul, even if I can't physically go to a better place or get to a better work environment or anything like that straight away, you know. If without education, we can't move out of our confines. We can't move out of our station on that ladder. And if we don't educate and if we don't nurture and we don't take care of these young people with people like Caleb and Andre, you're stuck. And that means there's no social climbing. There's no social lowering. Do you know what I mean? We just stay where we are.
It's being exposed to things. Stanley Kubrick always said that if you could get a kid and find out what really motivates them and excites them, it's like a nuclear bomb and sets their life off in all sorts of different directions. I wonder, with you, where was that moment? So you get into acting. Do you have an absolute crystalline moment in mind when you said, this is it?
I love this.
Yeah.
No, not really. Not with acting. It was with music, strangely, with these music teachers. It was, I remember I liked Friends. I don't even know if Friends was on. Was it on at that point? I think it was.
Yeah.
I liked Friends, and Chandler wore waistcoats. And I thought, I want to wear a waistcoat. Like, you guys call it like a vest.
Wow.
You guys call it like a vest.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
I remember hanging out in the music department with a different kind of group of friends and these teachers, and them all sort of not giving me any hassle or giving me a hard time because I'm wearing a waistcoat. And I thought, I can be me here. They also then let us perform and we put on concerts and all that kind of stuff. And that's the moment that I realized I love this. And for me, whether it's acting or whether it was, it's the same kind of thing. It's about performance. It's about communicating with an audience. All right, it's through drama and it's through acting instead of music. But it was probably when I was at high school with those amazing music teachers and a group of people that were interested in you experimenting and finding out who you were and not being so afraid to try things out that you just stayed this one little thing
right.
that everybody tried to conform to and just did what the whole group did and what the gang did. It was being with that group of people and those two incredible teachers that really made me think, right, this is for me. I want to do something in performance.
As a father with teenagers myself, it's so important, and I'm watching my kids go through this, of finding your community, finding your group, the people that that encourage you and that you're not afraid to be yourself around. It's everything. It's so important. It sets your life on the right course. And like these guys at Give and Go Athletics, you know, it may be there. It may be right there. It may be somewhere else. But you've got to try these things out to find out where they are.
Yeah, I think if there's people holding you back, if there's people telling you how you need to be instead of helping you find out what you want to be, then, you know, you've got to try and step away. It's easier said than done. Mm-hmm. Of course it is. Mm-hmm. But you've got to try and step away and find those people who let you grow and who want you to grow and help you grow.
Yeah. James, because of M. Night Shyamalan, we've all been lucky enough to meet you and spend a little bit of time with you, and I think we all just walked away genuinely impressed at what a nice and genuinely good person you are. And I think also it's sometimes shocking to us as lay people to see somebody as successful as you are be as nice as you are. Are you ever surprised at your own success or for lack of a better term, fame?
Darling, of course not.
It was meant to be. It was meant to be.
Complete sense to me. It makes absolute sense. Look, I'm very lucky. I came out of acting school. I love my time at acting school, but I came out of there, you know, very certain. You can be very certain or just certain. Mm-hmm. Certain that I would be I'd do okay. Maybe I'd get some theater work here and there, but I was going to have another thing to fall back on. And I thought that was probably going to be teaching. A friend of mine, Shauna McDonald, who runs a youth theater in Edinburgh, as well as being a successful actress in her own right. Her and I had an idea that we were going to, you know, maybe start a youth theater somewhere in Edinburgh. And then it just started to happen for me. But I was not certain it was going to work out for me. I thought I was by no means the star of my class, star of my year. But it's just different. It's just the industry needs different. I don't know. It just works out different for different people. I have a lot of luck, a lot of hard work, a lot of being in the right place at the right time, all that kind of stuff. And I think that's particularly true of this industry, but I think it's true of most industries and most walks of life, even if that particular industry isn't as oversubscribed as acting is.
Right.
But it's about hard work. It is about endeavor. It is about a positive attitude. But it is also just you've got to get lucky.
Yeah.
And you've got to be in the right place at the right time and meet the right people and stuff. So I've been exceptionally lucky. I'm now used to it. But for years, it felt so strange to me that anybody wanted to know anything about me or watch my movies or the fact that I was in movies, you know. I also just thought, all right, I'll just become one of those actors. I'm happy about this, by the way. If I can pay my bills as an actor, that was my goal. That was my deep, most heartfelt desire was just to be able to pay my bills and own somewhere that I could call my own and feel safe inside through acting.
Yeah.
So the fact that I've gone way beyond that is a massive blessing, and I really do thank anybody who's ever
who's assisted. Yeah,
I mean, honestly, now you can pay other people's
bills.
That's why
I'm here.
James, because of your partner and your association with Philadelphia and M. Night Shyamalan, I'm wondering if you follow Philadelphia sports, if you're now a fan of, let's say, the Eagles, the Flyers, who are in the playoffs right now, Sixers, Phillies, all that stuff.
You know what? I have not seen a single sporting event live in Philly.
Really?
And it's one of my big regrets. And also with COVID at the moment, I did a play at the end of last year coming in this year. So I've not actually been to Philly since September, man.
Okay.
I know. Well, I've got family here. I've got kids here. So I I can't really afford to go back to Philly and then quarantine for 2 weeks and then come back here and then quarantine for 2 weeks as well. So I basically had to stay here. But I'm desperate. I particularly want to go to an Eagles game because I've never been to a game of American football, and I find the idea quite exciting. I don't enjoy watching it on TV because there's so many commercials.
Yeah.
So I think watching it live might be pretty exciting. Okay. But I also quite like ice hockey as well, so I'm down to come and see the Flyers.
Cool. I wanted to ask you about with Night Shyamalan and with directors that you work with, and in particular, Night. I think you have to, for that performance, for Split and Glass, for what you had to do, for the essentially playing the Horde and all the characters and personalities associated with that, you've got to go out on a sort of an emotional tightrope with that, and you have to feel very comfortable with the director. Describe your relationship with Knight.
Yeah, no, I came in quite late in the day for Split, so it would have been real tough if we didn't click quickly, and we did. We just clicked real quick, just on FaceTime, having rehearsals then. And then about a week and a half after I got the part, I was in Philly rehearsing with him face-to-face.
Wow.
It came really quickly. I know. There were a couple of characters that were trickier for us to find. Hedwig was one of the trickiest, strangely.
Huh.
And I'd say, like, most of the characterization I got just from the script and then bringing my own stuff to it. But with Hedwig, I was finding it quite difficult. And weirdly, Knight just said, give him a lisp. And I was like, eh? I was like, I don't know about this. Is it going to be exploitative of, like, somebody with a speech impediment? I don't know. And but the minute I gave Hedwig a lisp, he sort of, the whole character fell into place. And then I started to discover all the stuff where he was like, because he said Kanye's his favorite and all that kind of stuff, I thought, right, okay, he's got to be heavy into hip hop, and he's going to be like one of those 9-year-old kids who wants to be like a bad boy 19-year-old kid. You know what I mean? He wants to hang out with the bigger boys, yeah. And he thinks he's street, he thinks he's tough, but he's absolutely not. I think that was one of the funnest discoveries that day with Knight. But yeah, look, he's a great technician. He writes his own material as well, which is the other thing too. I think when a director writes their own material, you've got a mainline avenue into their thought process and what they truly want. Sometimes a director finds it difficult to say to you, this is how I'd like it to be, this is how I'd like it to look, this is how I'd like it to sound. But when the director's actually written it, you're getting into their imagination through a form of art anyway. Like, just the script itself is a form of narrative art,
yeah,
and so it's a creative form of narrative art. So you're already in touch with their creative process before you're even accepting direction from them, or listening to them, or trying to decipher what it is they're actually going on about. Because sometimes they're not. He's very good at telling you what he's going on about, by the way. But it's even better when they've written the script, because you can see what they truly wanted, even subconsciously sometimes, because it's literally down in front of you in black and white.
James, speaking of Hedwig, which the character was awesome, there's a scene where he dances. Did you watch videos of kids trying to dance to put that together, or did you just make that up on the spot?
I can't remember if we made it up on the spot or if we rehearsed it. I can't really remember, but I know we didn't do many takes of it.
Oh, okay.
I can't remember if we rehearsed that or not. If we did rehearse it, it came quick. And if I think maybe we rehearsed it on camera,
okay,
or something like that, and then Knight would look at it and go like, I like that bit, do that bit, or egg that bit up, or that bit's a bit weird, egg that bit down, like and then there was a weird spider thing that I did, and if you look really closely, I think you can see that I get shot and I've got blood coming out of my neck at some point as well, which I was really into. Mm-hmm. But people miss that. How dare they? How dare they miss?
You got all that trouble.
Detailed performance. I know. That was a lot of fun. But I didn't look at any kids' videos. I don't think.
Okay, because you looked like you looked like a kid who was trying to be a badass dancer. It was great.
Yeah. Let me ask you.
There's actually a really good music video by a band called Jungle, which is a sort of electronic London collective.
Get Busy
band,
something.
Get Busy Earning?
Busy Earning?
I don't know if it's Busy Earning. I think it might be Julia. Busy Earning's a different video.
Okay.
But which is also a great video, by the way. But I think it's Julia, where they've got this little kid in a purple tracksuit who I think is about 4 or 5. Doing the best breakdancing. And that was actually a little bit of inspiration.
Okay.
For
So, so I have to imagine, because obviously you're in the Marvel universe, you've done a lot of genre stuff. Are you actively seeking out genre stuff because you're a fan, or is the genre stuff finding you?
It's a little bit of both, really. Yeah, a little bit of both. I mean, when X-Men came along for me, I hadn't worked in about a year. I just had taken some time out. My kid had just been born. It was filming in London. It was good money, and it was a franchise. Plus, I loved X-Men as a kid. So, and also, I'm a massive fan of Patrick Stewart. So I was like, this makes total sense. So it came to me, but I was also like tailor-made to love it anyway. It would be the kind of thing I'd be seeking out. So I got very, very lucky with that. And, other than that, the genre stuff that comes to me, yes, I have an attraction to that stuff, but you turn a lot down because it's got to be good enough. Do you know what I mean? I can't just do it because I think, hey, vampires are cool, I'm going to do this movie. Space is awesome, so I'm going to do this movie. Although the total dweeb in me is like, is mental, mad, kind of instinctually pushing me to do it. But if the script's not right or if the part's not right, then you can't just launch yourself.
That's probably,
And I'm lucky.
That's probably a good way to approach it.
Yeah, I think your portrayal of Charles Xavier is great, especially considering the fact that Patrick Stewart had done it so many times. You made it your own. You did your own thing. And listen, I've been known to sidetrack interviews from time to time, so this just doesn't really mean anything. But I'm pretty sure it's first class. You use an exclamation that I had never heard before, and I use probably at least on a weekly basis, wacky bananas. I had never heard wacky bananas before, and I say that all the time now.
I say wacky bananas?
Yeah.
In the movie?
You say wacky bananas. Yeah, it's wacky bananas, man. Yeah.
In what movie? I'm
pretty sure, listen, because they're all set like back in the day, but I'm pretty sure it is First Class. And I'm pretty sure it's when you're in the bar, macking on some ladies.
Oh, yeah.
Is that
perhaps on your family crest, wacky bananas?
Oh my God! I need to go check that. All right. I'm going to go check it out.
All right. So
I think, do you know what? I think I have a vague memory of trying to come up with just weird things that sounded like they were in the 60s that the people might say. But I was coming up with, my own creations. I think I tried to get the term Baby Sham Nightmare in there, but it got cut out as well. And the director was like, what does that mean? And I was like, oh, it's something that you used to say in the 60s. And it was just me making it up.
You just made it up.
It's just nonsense. That's excellent.
So of all those movies, all the X-Men movies total, James, my favorite is Days of Future Past. You're in that one. Do you have a favorite, even if you're not in it? Are any of the X-Men movies where you rank above the others?
I loved First Class for its kitschiness, and it really did try to, I think they tried to reboot a lot of what X-Men was doing by giving it a different vibe, a different tone, tried to make it feel more like a spy movie, tried to make it feel very sort of kitsch and I think more funny and more comic and more just a bit more capery or something like that.
Yeah, it's great.
And also it was a buddy movie, do you know what I mean? It was very much, as much as it was about everybody, it was really about these two guys forming a friendship, which I don't think any of the other X-Men movies had sort of formed themselves around a structure quite like that at that point. Then we went into Days of Future Past, which was actually, I felt like, going back to the more classic kind of X-Men vibe. But in saying that, it's probably my favorite experience of playing Charles, just because I got such a workout as an actor and I got to actually really go some interesting places with Charles, give me 2 seconds. My landline is ringing.
Sure, go ahead. Take it up.
I'll promote you.
We heard you were in an accident. No, leave me alone. Leave me alone.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so Days of Future Past is probably the best one for me. I can't get this shit. Please turn off.
That's God. Okay. It happens to the best of us. I have to just tell you before we were talking about you earlier this morning, about 2 weeks ago, I saw The Last King of Scotland, which I hadn't seen in a long while. That movie holds up. That is I think to me, that's when you first really ended up on my radar. And you and Forrest Whitaker have such an amazing chemistry in that movie. Do you have any recollections of that film? Any memories?
No, I was high as a kite, and I forgot.
It was all chemically induced, was it? Yeah.
Yeah, it was. It was not. Yeah, I mean, that was an amazing experience. I think I was 24 or something, and just to get to go to Uganda for 3 months and hang out with somebody like him and learn from somebody like him. Not only is he a great actor, but a great actor playing a truly demanding, exciting, dynamic, Oscar-winning role, Oscar-winning performance. That was you know, a formative part of my career. To be exposed to that and be around that was exceptional. And then also, you know, to have to kind of lead the narrative of the film,
yeah,
and have that responsibility on your shoulders as an actor was just an amazing learning experience. But then for the film to actually go on and do well, and most people see it and all that kind of stuff, I was really lucky, because I think I'd played lots of smaller parts up till then in movies, and I'd played leads in TV, but I'd never really played leads in movies. I'd done like Narnia and all that kind of stuff, which was more sort of character roles. But to play a sort of Jew lead in a movie like that was just incredible. And also to get to do it as a young Scottish person playing a Scottish person, because there's not a hell of a lot of work out there for Scottish actors if you can't pretend to be from somewhere else. So wanted to have one of the first things that really sort of got me out there and make a bit of a splash across the pond in America, but actually being Scottish, and you guys didn't all go, we can't understand the funny sense of that, and just ignore it. That was, I felt really, really fortunate, and just, I don't know, I felt good about that.
It's an amazing film. Listen, we do have to wrap things up, James. I'm gonna mention once again, and the main reason for the call was to talk about the organization giveandgoathletics.org. It's right here in Philadelphia. It's helping people in Philadelphia, kids who need some guidance, who need a community, and also those who might need some therapeutic help along the way. So it's a really great program, and I'll hit the website again. It's called giveandgoathletics.org. And it's really cool that you're, that you're promoting this, something right here in your second home. So we do appreciate that.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. But listen, they're also just there if you want a good time playing sport as well. They will do all that stuff, and they can help you out if you're in a tough time. But if you just want to play sports after school and your school or your community don't provide that, that's also what they're doing too. They are an incredible organization. Go seek them out, guys.
One request, if you don't mind, if you could take a picture of you wearing your Delco hat.
Yeah, I'll send you a picture of me and my Delco hat.
And absolutely, that'd be wonderful. Then we'll post it on social media and because people, for Casey alone, our producer, that's such a
cool. I need so to proud. See that on Instagram like immediately.
All right, listen, James, you're the best. Thank you so much, and hopefully we'll see you in Philadelphia sometime soon. Okay.
All right, you guys. Thanks a million. Take care.
Anytime. James McAvoy. Yeah. Wow. Oh, wow. What a something we already knew. Super nice guy.
Super nice guy. And yet again, a better phone connection from England.
Seriously, yeah.
And
from
his cell phone.
Yeah.
Because that was the landline was ringing.
What in the F?
I know. And by the way, dude. He should. It was because of when they released the movie, but Split, by far that year, the best performance by any male actor, in my humble opinion.
Yeah.
And but they released it at Past the Window, which I understand why they did that, because it was a huge success.
Yeah.
But he should be an Oscar winner, and probably will be one day, I would imagine. Wow, that was awesome. All right, we got to take a break. We're going to come back in a moment. We still have a whole load of guests. Chris Porter, comedian, is going to be joining us next. And after that, actor William Sadler, who's been in a ton of great things.
Love him, too.
And Jim Gaffigan on the show as well. So make sure you stay with us. Don't miss any of it. We'll be right back.
MMR's Saturday Night Concert Series, an hour-long concert made up of the best live performances ever captured.
MMR rocks.
Green Day, in concert, Saturday night at 7.
Don't wanna be an American idiot.
We're all jonesing for live music, and this should help. So hit the backyard, get the tailgate started, and crank up MMR, Saturday night at 7. It's MMR's Saturday Night Concert Series.
Sponsored by Acme Markets, official supermarket of the Preston and Steve Show.
This week, Green Day.
93.3 WMMR. Everything that rocks.
So we were going to talk to Chris Porter, but we can't get a hold of him. He's not answering.
What?
So that's all right. We have a few other guests to get to, Sophie. Calls in. If not, we have some other things that we can do. I could I mean, I just found this out. I could clean some things out of the junk drawer if you guys want.
You know what? That might leave us an option in case,
case he calls in. Yeah. All right, let me dive in. Oh, here's one.
You sold that good.
The Sixers are exploring the possibility of building a new basketball arena at Penn's Landing.
Yeah. That's kind of cool. I mean, that sucks for the Wells Fargo Center because, you know, that's a major source of revenue for them. But
the one question that comes to mind immediately is, how do you handle
the flow of traffic and parking?
It's immediately what I thought of, too.
Their lease goes through 2031, I think, with the Wells Fargo Center with the team. Mm-hmm. They've been looking to get out for a while or explore new options. Well, there's a few reasons. One is that several NBA teams have their own arenas, and so the Sixers, in part, are jealous. Two is that the guys, the leadership, the ownership group, also owns the New Jersey Devils. And so there was a fear at one point that because the New Jersey Nets moved to Brooklyn a few years ago, that the Sixers might leave Philly and go to North Jersey or just be the New Jersey Sixers, right?
Whoa.
So I will, of course, take Center City, Philadelphia over New Jersey. No disrespect to New Jersey. I don't want to leave the team, lose the team to that state.
We're used to it. I got t-shirts.
So, but I think the Wells Fargo Center will probably try to sweeten the pot to keep them there.
All right. I hope so.
I mean, if they were to do this, they would have to create a whole brand new exit for said arena.
I would imagine.
Yeah, mass transit, some kind of subway stop. You know, they'll have to extend a SEPTA line there. Yeah.
And a submarine base.
That'd be cool.
So you can go from Camden over.
I drove through Boston a week or two ago, and where the Celtics play and where the Bruins play is downtown Boston. And it's neat to see an arena in the middle of a city, but it's got to create a headache. It's got to create traffic. Oh,
yeah. There's, you know, it's funny when people come from out of the area and they'll say, you got all your main sports things, right? You know, you're all right in the spot. Yeah. And I guess tons of parking. And listen, there are jams getting in and out periodically. Of course, that's the case. But you go to some other areas where it's like nightmarish. I'll take that.
Wrigley Field, Chicago, and stuff like that. Yeah,
there is a train station right there.
True. Yeah, you have your mass transit for sure.
But not everyone has a train.
Yeah, no, you're right. But I remember Larry Appleton and Balky, Bartakamos, they got off of the train and went to Wrigley Stadium. I remember that in the beginning of Perfect Strangers. So, Nick, I have a question for you about Connie Mack Stadium. Where was that?
From a man who wears perfume.
North Philly, and I saw an article about where Connie Mack was recently. It's a neighborhood now, but Connie Mack was in the city, and there were, subway stops and train stations nearby.
All right.
But Philly hasn't. Oh. I remember what?
Marissa had a point to make, and then I looked over, and she was gone.
What happened?
And then you started talking, and I'm sorry.
Well, let me just finish my thought real quick, which was when the Phils played at the Vet. And they were going to announce a new stadium. There were several different places where they were talking about putting in a new baseball stadium. One was by the train station, by 30th Street Station. One was in Chinatown, and a lot of people opposed that.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And then it ended up in South Philly. And I remember initially thinking, South Philly's probably not the best location for it. However, now, to your point, Steve, having all of the sports complex in the same place, I think is a benefit to the city.
I do, too.
I just want to say, there is a train station down there. The Marco Frankfurt line.
At Penn's Landing?
It goes
Penn's
right
Landing?
To Penn's Landing. Okay. Yeah, it gets out right in front of like Continental Restaurant.
You're right.
Okay.
Right there. Yeah. So, you're right there. I think that would be
so cool.
If it
Do you guys all there. Use mass transit a lot to go to?
No,
I've
never.
Only a handful of times. I did for the NLCS one year, and it was great, man. Yeah. We made a quick exit before the game was coming to an end. I'm let's get out of here now.
Let's go.
But it was so much easier than dealing with the parking issue.
But a lot of people do, Steve.
Do they?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I use the subway to go to the Met. I've been to a few shows at the Met, and what I prefer to do is park away from it, hop on the subway, and get there that way. The problem with the Met is that there's not ample parking there, and it can be a little bit tough.
I always take my car because I keep chafing dishes in the backseat.
Well, I don't do that. Yeah, I'm just just a simple man. Yeah. For Eagles games, I can't stand traffic, and I can't stand sitting in a parking lot. So what I've been doing lately is I bring my bike with me, And because I park way back in the back of FDR Park, I hop on my bike, I lock it by the stadium, and then when everything's over, I'm back at my car.
It's a great idea.
Like 2 minutes, you know?
Excellent idea.
That is great. I started taking the train to Eagles games a few years ago, and it was the best decision I've ever made. Because it's just, especially like after a win, you get to go on the train, and you're kind of still like riding high on that vibe again with all the people around you. Because if not, you're in your car, you're sitting in the parking lot for an hour. Like, my parents will drive down, and they'll say, oh, we'll give you a ride home. And I refuse, because you go sit in the lot for an hour.
It's cool, too, because if you're on the train, you get to watch guys run into steel girders.
That was the best.
That was the best. So, yeah, it's a ways off. Like Nick was saying, 2031 season. But, you know, they've got to make plans now, especially if you're going to build something. And
where would they put it?
That's what I'm wondering, Kath. It doesn't seem like enough room on Penn's Landing alone.
I mean, a lot would
just
go
make
away.
Make the court thinner. I think
they just run right along the river.
There's a lot of stuff changing down there. I don't know if you guys have been down recently, but like Festival Pier is completely gone.
They got rid of it.
Remember they're flattening that? And then I think I heard like the lease at Dave and Buster's is up sooner or later. So I don't know. There's a lot of redevelopment happening down there.
Maybe
there's some areas.
Maybe they'll finally do the thing that they should have done 50 years ago, which is put 95 underground through Penn's Landing, and then because some of it is like there are sort of streets from Philly that worked their way to the riverfront
over
95. But if they're going to build a stadium there, maybe they can incorporate some type of city planning.
To that point, there was a plan that was on in fact, we had talked about it, where they were going to basically cover over the area.
Yeah.
So there's basically like a rooftop deck over 95.
They were also going to do a tramway between Camden and Penn's Landing.
That Stonehenge thing.
Yeah, the big Stonehenge piece of concrete was going to anchor that is still there. That would have been a great idea for, you know, going to concerts.
It's a great spot now for sacrifices, if you want to.
Right. But, yeah, I'm curious as to the amount of space that they would have. They'd have to get rid of the River Rink, which would suck because that's kind of fun to go to.
Yeah, but they put another one by City Hall.
But not the same.
That's not the same.
All right, anyhow, they are kicking that idea around. So, you know, be open to it because you never know. But it's a ways off before something like that might happen. All right, let me see what else I got. Just random stuff from my junk drawer. How about this one? Busch Beer is introducing a non-alcoholic drink for dogs called Dog Brew.
Dog Brew. That's just what my dog's been asking for.
Yeah, the drink introduced on National Dog Day, which was yesterday, is actually bone broth that Busch says has a dog-friendly flavor and lots of nutrients and comes in cans that look like beer cans.
That's great. So your dog can knock a few back.
Are dogs envious of the beer?
Oh, God, you know it. You see them lustfully looking at you, cracking open your cans of beer.
Some dude, you know, down south and go, come here, Scooter.
Yeah. Come here.
Let me blow some pot smoke in your food.
Yeah. Will dogs drink beer?
Yes.
I don't know. They will.
Our Great Dane used to years ago.
No kidding.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
Okay. I mean, they'll eat their own poop, so I think anything you put in front of their face.
Yeah. Dude, my dog will sniffs out, like, because he had an ear infection, so I was giving it pills.
Yeah.
And I was giving it to him in, like, cheese and meat, and he would sniff it. He's like, I know what you're doing here. And he wouldn't take it.
Like, eat around it?
Yeah. He wouldn't take it. I was like, this thing is tiny.
Yeah, ours does the same thing, Haley. She took him at first,
yeah,
and then after a while. But I think there's probably a bitter taste to the pill once they get it in their mouth, and they're like, I ain't doing that anymore. Uh-huh.
You know what I found? It's actually really good for your dogs, and it's a way to sort of hide stuff like that. It's called yolk. It's almost like the same stuff that bodybuilders use, and it's basically yolk powder from eggs. And you put it over the food, sort of just spread it over the food, they go nuts for it.
Wait, so they'll actually eat food?
So, like, if you put the dog food, I mean? Yeah, if you're trying to sell a particular food to them, they will go for it.
It's called yolk?
Yolk, and it's in a pouch. You keep it refrigerated, and it's basically powdered, dried egg yolk.
And is it for dogs?
For dogs. Yeah,
that's awesome.
But also, humans use it, a variation of it as well, for, like, weight training and things of that nature.
Like Rocky when he was drinking
your dog waking up in the morning
instead
going to the fridge.
He's using powdered instead of cracking raw eggs. Wow, okay. I was not familiar with that product. So, by the way, it comes in beer cans. Ingredients used to make the brew include bone-in pork butt.
Yeah, I saw that movie.
corn, celery, basil, mint, turmeric, and ginger.
Yes.
For figging.
Yes, of course.
And
dogs love figging.
If you're tempted to take a sip, it is safe for humans to drink. but alcohol is toxic for dogs, so you should never do the reverse and give your dog beer. So dog brew can be given to a dog's on its own or poured over food.
So, yeah, this was years ago, so giving your dog beer on a regular basis is not a good idea. But here, this is interesting.
Scott and his dog drink all the time. We just lost him. I think right when you said that, he's like, I probably shouldn't go on.
I'm going to look like I'm abusing my pets. Yep.
Bush beer brings back high school memories.
Bush. It was cheap.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't drink it. My friends did.
Of course not. You were an angel in high school.
She was having that French champagne where you have no words on it.
There's no words on it.
No words on it.
All right.
I can't read it. There's no words on it.
All right, let me go back in the drawer. This is interesting. Dating someone who's a lot older than you isn't a problem for many people. In fact, they may prefer it. And now there's a new dating website just for them. It's called 20 Dating. The site launched this past Monday. It is for people looking to date someone with at least a 20-year age gap.
Oh, my gosh.
So if you do any sort of general scanning around social media, and in particular TikTok, this is a big thing. I see so many random videos pop up of younger women talking about how much they love
older guys.
Well, but
for how long? You know,
I can't see that. Well, look, what relationship just dissolved? The was it Scott Disick? That, you know, here's a guy who's stable and everyone loves, but he broke up with Sophia, whatever her name is, Richie. So there was a 16-year difference.
Yeah,
but this is the rage now.
A friend of mine just got engaged. She's the older one, and I don't know her fiance, but I saw them post a picture on Facebook, and I was like, oh, dear God. I had to click on his profile and go to his about to see what year he was born. Like, he's definitely 20 to 25 years younger than her.
Okay. All right.
Oh, okay. I mean.
So, yeah, it goes both ways in this on this site. It's just a 20-year age gap minimum. Daters can even ask to be matched with people with larger age gaps. 20 Dating creator David Mins said, I just want to take away the stigma of big age gaps and to help people avoid being ridiculed on other popular dating sites. The website has 350 members so far.
Can you make me some pudding?
With men outnumbering women 2-1.
Of course.
Yes.
Yeah. Of course. We talk about this, and it's a clickbait site, but there are other sites that expose this. You'll see that we're talking about these wealthy guys who are basically, they make the Crypt Keeper from Tales from the Crypt look vital.
Yeah.
And they're with these stunning young women.
Yep, yep.
I have
funny how that happens to rich people, isn't it? Yeah. What is the attraction?
That's crazy. Yeah.
All right, listen. Sorry, these were just a couple of stories I had to clean out from the junk drawer. So we have yes, thank you. That's our junk drawer theme. Hope you enjoyed it.
That was incredibly short, but still engaging.
Stop it.
Okay.
We are excited to talk to our next guest, and I love the fact that he is reprising this role. Oh my God. I mean, this man, he's a serious actor. He's done some incredibly heavy roles over the years, including Shawshank Redemption and The Green Mile. And he's done some really cool genre stuff, including Iron Man 3,
yeah,
Die Hard 2, a bunch of great movies. But he played Death in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
Stole the movie.
And he's back. And I'm so glad that this franchise is returning and he is reprising his role. Please welcome William Sadler.
Yeah! The
show. Hey, William.
Hi. How are you guys?
Doing great. I'd mentioned, you know, some heavier roles that you've done. It's gotta be fun to just do something goofy every now and then.
Oh, it's the best fun you can have. It's just the best. When I was in high school, I did stand up for a while. I was Banjo Bill Sadler. I told jokes and played the banjo. And I mean, comedy has always been something. I mean, it's just been it's close to my heart. I love to do comedy, and I don't get a chance to do it. When I got to Hollywood, they were casting me in these, you know, one heavy after another heavy after another heavy, and then Bogus Journey came along. And I think part of the reason that it was as much fun as it was because he starts as a heavy.
Yeah.
When you first see the Reaper, he's this scary dude.
Yeah,
but he becomes this sort of which is great is he becomes sort of this needy. wanting to belong. He realizes that he's, while he might excel at chess, he's not good at Battleship.
Right.
And and there are flaws in what he's able to do. And that transition is so hilarious. I have to ask you, William, what made you go with a sort of a Czech accent for Death?
I don't, you know what, they actually, the casting people, I told them I want to do an accent when I, for my first audition, and they said, yeah, you probably shouldn't do that. That's probably not a good idea. You know, I couldn't resist. I've been carrying that accent around for years, looking for a place to use it. And what's wonderful is everything he says sounds fine when you do the accent. You just put the accent on the wrong syllable. Everything you say sounds funny. You can read the phone book with it, and it just sounds silly. He's struggling with the English language.
And I, from what I understand, it won everybody over. I have to ask you in particular, this line that I wonder if it was improvised or whatever. It came up on the set where you're walking by a guy who's smoking, and you say, I'll be seeing you soon, basically. was that in the script, or was that something that you had come up with?
That was something I came up with, actually. We were filming in the hardware store. And you have to shoot at night when the store is closed, of course. And I thought it would be really funny if he's just walking by someone who's smoking, and as he goes by, just see you real soon. and the guy puts his cigarette out. And I told Pete Hewitt, the director, the idea. And he said, oh, that's great. But we didn't have there was no actor cast in that role, so Peach is that brought the cameras over, and he plays the smoker.
Oh, that's great.
That's the director. That's Pete Hewitt, the smoker in the scene. And took 2 seconds to shoot.
Well, I wanted to ask William, because you've had a long, successful career. You've watched actors come and go, and you've watched some blossom into huge stars, like Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
And I'm really happy for Alex Winter that he's able to reprise this role, and these two guys are back together again, because they seem like buddies in real life, and I believe that they are. And never would have I ever guessed that Keanu Reeves, who seemed like he was starting to get typecast. He played this type of character in River's Edge. He was this type of character in a handful of movies. You know, yeah. I Love You to Death. You know,
Fahrenheit,
Rom-Com, yeah.
Matrix.
And you know, tell me about your experience working with these young guys and watching their career and what they become to this late on.
It's been fascinating. After Bogus Journey, we the three of us sort of went our own way. I think Keanu and Alex have always remained buddies, and you know, have dinner with each other and hang out. But it's been remarkable to watch Keanu's development as an actor and as a movie star. Really, he's The Matrix. The Matrix is one of those films. If I'm clicking around, I get stuck on it. I can't not watch it.
Yeah.
And Alex has gone on to do these documentaries. He got into directing, and he did one called The Panama Papers.
Yeah.
And he did one that's coming out soon called about Frank Zappa, who we both knew. He's had this terrific, successful career doing these brilliant documentaries, and then to get pulled back and do the acting thing again was pretty remarkable.
So Bill and Ted Face the Music. This is obviously they're old. They're further on. They're older. They have kids themselves. How does death become? How does the Grim Reaper get reintroduced into their lives?
I don't want to spoil anything for people that haven't seen it, but they, at the end of Bogus Journey, they're a band, and they go off on tour, a world tour, and then the Reaper has a solo career.
That's right.
he goes off and starts making albums. But the albums are all bass.
Yeah.
There's no vocals. There's no other instruments. Right?
Yeah.
And so they don't. His solo career goes in the dumper. And when we find him in Face the Music, he's sort of fallen on hard times. And there's some hard feelings, too, as you might imagine. But there's redemption. I mean,
all right. Well, we know you can't give away a lot of it, but it would not be the same movie without you being in it. But we talk about your comedic flair, and I'll say this: you are responsible for a genuine, outright laughter in a movie that is as sober as Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah.
when you're going through the books and the book titles. Which is a great sequence again.
Yep, he said it. Alexander Dumas.
What I love in that scene, though, is even though you've been called on it, you're resolute. You turn the book around like it says it right there.
That's in the script. What's really sweet about that moment is that he's so surprised himself that that's a, you know, no, it looks like dumbass.
Yeah.
he's not the brightest bulb in the sun, Haywood.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now,
that's really what's funny there.
You not only played Haywood in Shawshank, but another Stephen King film. You were in The Green Mile, which leads me to ask if Stephen and you, if you've ever encountered each other, did he appreciate your portrayals in the roles? If so,
I've only met Stephen King once, okay. Briefly, and he said he loved my work. And it was mutual, I assume
he would have requested you not appear in any of his stuff if he thought otherwise, right?
No, exactly. If he told Frank Darabont, don't ever hire that.
That's the Grim Reaper. Don't do that. I wanted to ask because I think one of the iconic great evil. Bad characters in any movie is Die Hard 2 and Colonel Stewart and working on that film that was right after the huge success of the original Die Hard. What was that like?
That was great fun. I had just gotten to Hollywood, maybe just a couple years before that one happened. That was, I have to say, there was a bit of pressure when you're doing a sequel because I had seen the first Die Hard in the movie theaters,
yeah.
and I was a fan, and Alan Rickman acted the daylights out of that role. I mean, he was brilliant, I thought, as the villain in that thing. He was the slimiest creature I've ever seen. and it was this huge success, and now they're going to make Die Hard 2. And the nude scene and so on. So I was
you're in the hotel. You're in jacked shape in that film.
Dude, thank you. the nude scene wasn't in the script. I found out about it at the costume fitting. The director was there. You know, Rennie Harlan was there, and there was no costume for that scene. And I said, "What's he wearing in the hotel, doing the Tai Chi?" And Rennie said, "Well, he's from Finland." And he said, "Well, Bill, I was thinking you would be nude."
You would be nude.
And I said, I probably should have called my agent and gotten them to shell out more money.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, that's great. And you use a TV remote as sort of a quasi weapon when you change the channel. But it's great. I mean, it's funny because Preston's kids have discovered the Bill and Ted franchise, and we're really excited for this third film.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It opens in theaters and on demand tomorrow.
Yeah.
By the way, so we can see movies again.
I know.
Great.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, William, continued success. We love your work, and we wish you the best, and we'll talk to you sometime soon, okay?
Thank you so much.
Anytime. William Sadler, guys.
Yeah.
He's great.
Another good dude. Yeah. Yep, just his the body of his work is terrific.
And All right.
He was also he was in both Tales from the Crypt movies.
Was he?
Demon Knight and Bordello of Blood.
You're right.
Yeah.
That's correct. Wow. All right. So was our next guest sleeping in?
What's the story?
He was sleeping in. He said his he said his alarm wrong.
Okay.
We'll have to find out what
I
that
believe
means.
A man who has to rely on scheduling to set his alarm incorrectly.
He's got a live stream that is taking place tomorrow. He's great. Anytime we've had him in, we're dying laughing, and we're happy to have him on. Chris Porter.
Yeah!
Hey, sleepyhead.
What up, everybody?
Hey, man. How you doing?
Hey. I'm good at jokes. I'm good at... that's it. I'm good at jokes.
All right, that's it.
Yeah, that's the only thing.
Well, you're
yeah.
good at meeting famous people and becoming buddies with them, too. We found that out over the years.
Well, that's just because I'm just a global sensation.
That's got to be it. You're a global sense. Now, obviously, during in the time of the pandemic, has that diminished your global sensation status? Are you finding it hard to get into these situations with the celebrities?
Yeah, they're all in bunkers, hold up with weapons, so it's a little difficult. They haven't given me the combination to the bulkhead door.
Right, but, of course.
You know, it is what it is. I'm learning how to cook. I bought a skillet.
You bought a skillet?
I did. I thought I was buying a pan. Turns out I'm buying a riddle. And, hey, you got to wash it, or you got to keep it clean, but you can't wash it. So good luck with that. That's fun.
So you're learning all this. Now, you've always impressed us when you come in on the show that you're a guy who's out and about all the time. But your ability to adapt to being in quasi quarantine, we understand you've gotten much better at golf. Is that correct?
I'm playing it a lot more. I don't know how much better I'm getting at it. you know how it is. You're just like, maybe if I give you more money, I'll be better at this. And that's not how it is.
No.
But I'm trying my best. I'm going out there. I'm tan AF. I'll tell you that much.
I can't even imagine you as like, are you George Hamilton tan or are you?
Oh no. Like I'm not like skin cancer level 4 tan, but, I don't look like I'm malnourished anymore.
Oh, so there you go. That's good. A step.
Yeah. And no one's come up to me asking me if I start in powder this month. So.
Well, yeah, you don't want that. So the concept of the show, you're live streaming it. It's tomorrow night at 10 p.m. locally. And it's coming from, where is it being streamed from?
Well, it's being streamed from my apartment, unfortunately, because no one can go anywhere. And but no, you go to rushtix.com, which is rushtix.com, and you pay your $15. They send you a link, and you can watch it from anywhere in the world.
All right. So are you doing a set, or you're talking to guests? What are you doing?
I do both. I do my hour. It's kind of like if you went and saw me at the Punchline, see me do an hour of comedy, but except at the end, I just hang out and there's like a questions forum and you can ask me stuff and I hang out and you can watch me get half drunk and a little stoned.
Okay. So well, there you go. That's to me, that's worth $15.
I think so.
Yeah. Hey, listen, with the pandemic, did that squelch your being able to be excited about the Chiefs and the Super Bowl and all that stuff? Or are you still celebrating and on a high from that?
Oh, no, I'm still on a high from it. The new season doesn't seem real.
Like, yeah.
I think it'll be real once it starts. Like, baseball seems real when you watch it. Basketball is tough to watch because you're like, oh, this scrimmage counts.
Yeah. and in hockey, they're actually pumping in like crowd cheers and stuff like that. So when the teams are scoring, you hear the crowd go crazy. Are you watching Hard Knocks at all? Because they're covering two football teams this year.
I'm not watching Hard Knocks, but I'll tell you, here's why they're pumping in the crowd noise, so you can't hear the horrifying things they say to each other during the game.
Yeah.
That has proven problematic with some of the, there's some stuff, what used to be covered under the crowd noise is now readily hearable.
Well, and now with football, because remember back in the day, even with the crowd noise, if the football play happened too close to the sidelines, you'd hear just, like, the players would say something really awful, and always the sportscasters would have to be like, well, you know, ladies and gentlemen, it's a man's game, and they say a lot of tough things to each other.
It's a man's game. So with that and your isolation, you still are doing your podcast with your sister, correct?
Yeah, I got to do something, or literally you'd just be here, you'd be reading from a note that I left.
Well, so here's, I'm interested in stand-up comedy because you have, I mean, you just countless different perspectives on life. And, you know, everybody has their approach to their craft. But, like, here we are all kind of experiencing the same thing. And so I know, like, the material that is going to, you know, come out is going to be similar. But so I'm really interested to see how everybody's spin is going to be on this thing.
Right, right.
I think it's going to be like politics where, like, I don't plan on talking about it at all. I mean, I'm sure some people, their next hour will be like the quarantine hour or whatever. But you're right. We have all gone through it. And I feel like it's the last thing people want to hear. So, like, when you come to my shows, I might say one or two things, but you have to acknowledge the fact that it happens so people don't think you're insane. But I'm not gonna be doing 20 minutes on how I had to stay inside and smoke weed for 6 months.
I think you're right. I think everyone gets it, and it's like it's, you know, it would almost be like a hack joke at a certain point. I wanted to ask you about, you did a drive-in show. Was it the Irvine Spectrum? We just had Burke Kreischer here. We're having Jim Gaffigan over the weekend. So your experience with doing the drive-in comedy, was it were you a fast study or did it take adjusting?
It definitely took adjusting. I mean, as much as I hope you buy tickets to the virtual show, it's definitely a step up from those. The virtual shows are weird just because, like, there's a full second between the time I tell the joke, you laughing, and me hearing the laughing. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like I got my junk hanging in the wind all the time, like after every joke. It's like, here's the punchline. Okay, and you thought it was funny. Okay.
So are you saying you will have your junk hanging in the wind during this, or is that just an analogy?
It's an analogy.
Okay, all right.
You know, depending on the temperature, it's nice to have your junk hanging in the wind. But, you know, if it's too cold, it's not.
Yeah.
So, but the drive-in show was great. It was like, you know how you tell a joke and you hear laughter? You just don't get the second part.
Right.
And it's like joke, and then, like, you kind of hear the assumption of laughter.
Okay.
And you just kind of move on. Because everyone's still in their cars. They, like, the one I did, I think when Bert does them, like, you're supposed to honk when you laugh, but we're in a mall, so they're like, don't you dare honk. So it was a little awful in that case.
Right, yeah, they have it a little bit. The setup here that they're doing, that Live Nation is doing, is pretty solid. But, I mean, obviously this is, you know, it's on the way to getting back to where we are, so it's something. But people have just been really responding well. That's why I think even just getting it to get a live show streaming the way you're presenting it is providing something that people really miss.
Yeah, I mean, it was just like when we didn't have sports for 3 months. You were like, man, I didn't care at all about hockey, but if they showed 4 minutes of it right now, I'd watch it and cry at the end.
Something. Anything. No, it makes total sense. All right, well, listen, Chris, we got to wrap, but tickets are available for your live stream. It's tomorrow, 10 p.m., and you can go to RushTix. That's RushTix.com. Get it. There's going to be a Q&A. Chris is awesome, so we'll send people that way. All right, man?
Hey, thanks for having me, and sorry I slept in. I'm not great at alarm setting.
No, no problem. Okay.
You got time to work on it. All right, thanks. Chris Porter, guys. Hey! It's called We're Not in Kansas Anymore, by the way. All right, we have to take a break. We still have more people to talk to this morning. Jim Gaffigan will be the next one. We got the Bizarre File on the way as well. So stay there because we're not going to be gone long.
What's new?
Glad you asked.
Cage the Elephant.
Call me when you're ready to be real.
Larkin Poe. Rival Sons.
We move through the world like shooting stars across the sky.
New music, more of everything that rocks.
On 93.3 WMMR.
We got a couple of minutes before Jim Gaffigan is scheduled to get in touch with us. So a couple pieces of audio that I can play for you this morning that I think are pretty interesting. Steve came across these. One of them involves William Shatner.
This is, you know, you and I are fans of what William Shatner has done with having a brain fart.
With
Ben Folds.
Yeah, he had a great album called Has Been.
Yeah, and the one that was before that was great too. So he's done a lot of cool stuff. This is with Ritchie Blackmore. And it's, you know, who's obviously legendary.
Yeah, Deep Purple and Rainbow. And, yeah, he's an outstanding guitar player.
And they cover, I believe it's a blues classic. It's a B.B. King.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's The Thrill Is Gone.
The Thrill Is Gone.
And we have a little bit to play for you, so we'll see what you think about this.
The Thrill Is Gone. Thrill is gone, baby. The thrill has gone away. You know, you've done me wrong, baby. And you'll be sorry someday.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So he's playing around with that a little bit. Yeah.
I'm still a fan of the original, but that's an interesting take.
I saw B.B. King do that live with Fish. And
how cool.
Listen, it was such a surprise. I saw Fish at the East Rutherford, New Jersey, and it was, I think it was around the time the Grammys were happening. So B.B. King was in town, and he came out and did three songs. And at one point, Trey and B.B. were exchanging guitar licks, and I couldn't tell who was who. You listen to the live version. I'm like, these guys are just, it was for me, an amazing experience.
Were you able to appreciate it while it was happening?
I appreciate more on the listen back.
Yeah.
And the fact that I was there. But, I think I was able to appreciate it. But, you know, now because I've listened to it so many times, I know what to expect.
Sure. Hey, I saw Buddy Guy perform one time, and he's still going. BB passed away a few years ago. But if you get a chance to go see these legendary blues guitarists, do it, because you don't know how long they're going to be around.
I saw B.B. King at a place, I think it's called My Father's Place. It was on Long Island. And
like a small, intimate kind of a thing?
200 people.
Oh, my God, Steve.
No. I mean, I don't know how the hell he ended up there, but he was there. And he was, you know, obviously still revered, but I think maybe he was setting up for another show, a bigger show.
Wow.
I was 50 feet away from him. It was amazing.
Wow. So Ritchie Blackmore, any idea what this is from?
Richie so Blackmore, it says, I got the full thing here. Just give me a nanosecond. So William Shatner releasing an album of blues covers with guitar playing guests Brad Paisley, Jeff Skunk Baxter, Steve Cropper, and Pat Travers. And in this case, he's with Ritchie Blackmore.
Wow.
He loves doing this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's okay. I've liked the other stuff, you know, more.
Yeah, well, I mean, listening to the one album that I listened to and fell in love with was Has Been, and he flows through a few really goofy, dumb things that he does, and then some other things have a really serious tone to them and are done very well, and so he floats in and out of that. I mean, he's an actor. He likes to play.
Right.
I wonder if he'll do any press for this blues album, because it'd be cool to have him
on. Maybe, yeah. We've talked to him before.
You know, he did the classic, you know, the Rocket Man thing is often parodied. Yeah. I think it's going to be a long time.
Right.
Touchdown brings me back again to fire.
Yeah.
And then there's, if you want to go to the other clip here, Preston, this is a weird thing. It is.
This is stupid.
I think it's stupid. I agree. I agree 100%. It's 99 metal musicians covering 99 bottles of beer on the wall.
So each line is sung by a different metal artist because, you know, you have 99 beers, bottles of beer on the wall, take one out and pass around, 99 bottles of beer on the wall. And so you do that 99 times.
Right.
And so they have a different person quote unquote singing each one of these lines.
And besides that, once you get like 20 deep, you know, even there, who knows? There's some from bands you've never heard. There are people from Slayer.
I know, you know, that there's a market for this. There's an audience for this.
Yeah.
These bands sell out shows. They sell loads of records. I don't get it. I'm like, it's like Kathy eating with your fingers.
Yeah.
I just
don't eat bacon with your fingers and you don't do 99 bottles of beer on the
wall. Our guest is coming on the line, so let me play some of this. That's normal, actually.
Pass it around. There's no more bottles of beer on the wall.
All right, so I didn't listen to the end here. I listened to the beginning of it.
Right.
And the beginning of it is like, there's no more of beer on the wall. I mean, it's that death metal,
that
stuff that makes
bellowing
sense to me whatsoever.
And then it tamps down a bit, and they go through. Apparently, they're going through all 99. But I mean, it's one of as far as a driving song where you traditionally would do this with people if you're taking a long journey. I've always hated this song.
Yeah.
So hearing it done this way does no good.
Well, this is for the death metal fans, and you know who these people are, so I guess if you find that entertaining.
It is for a charity. That's what I understand. It is. Yes, it's for some sort. I think it's for a pet charity.
Some charity.
But they said after its release, people have actually taken to killing their pets. Which is and that's the exact opposite.
Not aware of that. Yeah. All right. On a completely different note.
Yes.
Nothing like that at all.
No.
Our next guest has got a show coming up on Saturday. Citizens Bank Park, it's a live-in, drive-in. We just did one a couple of weeks ago with our buddy Bert Kreischer. Went to that, had a great time.
It's
these,
great.
These shows work.
They're fantastic.
So tickets are on sale now. By the way, for the show, you can go to phillies.com/drive-in to get all the information. Please welcome the star of that show, Jim Gaffigan.
Yay!
To the program. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Of course, absolutely. Have you done some of these drive-ins, Jim?
I have. They are, it's a very strange experience. It's can you hear me?
You're coming in and out a little bit.
Yeah, your signal.
Could you step out onto the balcony?
Oh gosh, I'm sorry.
Okay.
But yeah, you know, it's a weird experience, but it is good. It's, people enjoy it, and I think that, look, it's strange. It shows you how kind of desperate we've become for live entertainment in this time, but people enjoy it.
Well, here's our experience. Yeah, everyone is, who has done it says it is different, but here's the mindset. If you can get out there, during the Bert Kreischer show, people pulled up. They had pickup trucks and they had vehicles that they were able to relax in or convertibles. And once they got there, and you're right, people are just chomping at the bit to get back to anything that's sort of like live entertainment. So once you factor into the equation that it's not exactly, once that's passed, you enjoy it for what it is, which is a great outdoor experience, and everyone loved it. So are you? Obviously, your presentation is you're not Gallagher on stage. You're not you're going around. You have your deal. Have you adapted? Will there be pyrotechnics? Do you go bigger?
Well, no. It's some of it is you have to address the reality of what you're dealing with. You know, like the self-awareness. But no, I don't have like pyrotechnics or anything like that. It's like we're all going through this pandemic together.
Right.
So there is, and I did a CBS Sunday morning commentary on this. It's just kind of like we're craving community. Right? Like, I miss like the annoying people at this point. You know what I mean?
You're getting an appreciation for the annoying people now.
Yeah, no, it's just there's something about it's such a weird experience, and you don't have to be like somebody who loves to tailgate, but it's it's weird. It's, you know, like I've done it twice before. I did it once in a horse track parking lot, and I did it once in an arena parking lot. And, you know, we've got the technology to pull this off. It's just, it's a strange experience. But then again, you know, we're all, you know, we have to be safe. You know, like my wife is high risk. So we're all kind of dealing with different scenarios. So, but it is kind of, it's, you know, it's kind of like, you know, it's not like a gluten-free bun. You know, like, it's horrible.
It goes right to food. Yeah.
It's more like the sugar-free whipped cream. You know, like you don't need enough whipped cream to know the difference. Like it's been 6 months. Sure, would we love to be in the Met? Yes, you know, but this is going to be a different experience. It's weird because I'm developing this material just for these shows, and I hope that I'll never be able to use it again.
I would say this, that it's possible that there is, and we were talking to the Live Nation. And by the way, the stage setup here is phenomenal. So where in other places, they have not, from what I understand, risen to the occasion. But this setup is a really tremendous setup. You're elevated, and it has the way everything's laid out, it could not be better. But I think there could be a hybrid at some point that would allow things like this to take place. And it might be when all this is over, and it will end. This might be a potential avenue for other ways to perform.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think also something to consider, because this was relatively a last minute thing, was I view this as, look, fall's coming. You know, this might be the last time that we can do a drive-in show until the spring.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it's, you know, we all live in this kind of time where, like, you know, late October, November is like when Satan's going to roam the earth or something. You know what I mean?
That traditionally is when Satan roams the earth, yes.
So it is, I saw this as also like one of the last opportunities, at least, you know, for us here in the Northeast, because it's going to get too damn cold.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I got to say, when I found out that you were coming, I was like, okay, this is a big deal. You always sell out in the area. And I got to tell you, like, you are hands down my wife's favorite comedian. She has seen you at the, you had mentioned the Met. She saw you at the Met. She's seen you in Atlantic City. She watches your Netflix specials over and over again. And I was actually listening to one of your Netflix bits the other day with my daughter in the car. She's almost 15 years old. And she doesn't know who Bjorn Borg is. And when you hit the Bjorn Borg punchline, she just died laughing. She just thought you were making up words. I don't want to give away the bit, but like she absolutely just was crying laughing at your bits.
Yeah, you know, it's. I appreciate that. And I tell you, another thing that I find appealing about these drive-in shows, look, I've been stuck with my family for 6 months.
Yeah.
And so it's like, there's things you can do with your family, and then they're back on their screens. And this is actually a family event that you can do with your family that is not just involving everyone on a screen or sticking food in your face. You know what I mean?
So lest we forget that when other people claim, well, it's a family-friendly show, they can say, I performed for the Pope. You can say that.
Yes, I did. You know, it's. I mean, that feels like 100 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much. And it's also fun because you feel like you're recreating a scene from the movie Cars. And I'm like Mater. It's so weird. You know, we live in this.
It is.
Where there's unique. Like, look, I took my family hiking. I'm losing my mind. I have a garden.
It's true.
It's like asking you, providing entertainment where you sit in a car or you rent a flatbed truck is not that weird compared to some of the other stuff we've done. And we're about to enter hell. It's going to be, it really is. It's like, so I don't know. I think it's a very interesting time, but I view this as like, this is probably one of the last shows we're ever going to have anyway.
So as as the world spirals out of control, this is your last chance to laugh. I wanted to ask you because I just purchased it. I'm going to watch it this weekend. The movie with Ethan Hawke, Tesla. You are in that film.
Yes, yes. I played George Westinghouse, who was a guy who essentially kind of ripped off Tesla. Tesla was this visionary guy who I was kind of Westinghouse was the benefactor. And this movie is of, you know, it's very kind of indie and offbeat, but it's, you know, it's all over the iTunes page and people are enjoying it. You know, it's also another thing that, you know, we're all looking for entertainment. We're all looking for something to besides a bag of chips. You know what I mean? It's like, what can I do? But there's also part of me, it's like, you know, I've done everything that I want to do during the quarantine or the pandemic. I don't want to learn guitar. You know what I mean?
Yes.
You know, there's certain things I don't want to do. Like, I'm not going to, you know, I'll cook for my family, but I'm not going to make bread. Do you know what I mean? It's like there's a certain level of, of fatigue. So we got to get out there while we can.
You're right.
We do. At the onset of quarantine and so on, my wife and I have three kids. So my wife was immediately like, okay, today we're going to do this project. Tomorrow we have a we're all going to work on this family puzzle. The day after that, it was like, boom, she had all of these things set up. It lasts for like 2 weeks. And then after that, it's back to staring at your phone, sitting on the couch. What are we going to do now? So stuff like this is exactly
absolutely
what we're needing.
And I'll tell you where it also comes in. The fact, Jim, is that I'm tired of hearing that people have become concert-level harpsichord players during – and I have done nothing. I have done nothing to get better at anything during this time, and I feel like I'm a massive underachiever.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where, you know, finding something that is safe and constructive is impossible. You know, I don't know about you, but like going to the grocery store is, you know, first of all, I go in and once a week, I take my kids to the car wash. That's the equivalent of Disney World. You know what I mean? It's like, we need things to do. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, I planted seeds. They grew. I harvested. I even started eating the damn vegetables. It's just like, we need some things to do. And this is something we're going to be able to do outside. It's like, who knows? Like, are we going to be able to, are the kids going to be able to trick-or-treat? I don't know. Maybe everyone should come in their Halloween.
get to use your Halloween costumes. You know, one of the benefits, too, and this is a cool thing, when you come in, the way they have it set up, everyone gets a card, and they put the QR code into their phones, and food and beverages are brought to their vehicles. So they don't...
And merch, too.
And merchandise.
You have merchandise you're going to sell, Jim?
I don't know. You know, it's also one of those things where, we're all kind of struggling here. You know what I mean? It's like, I was supposed to be at the Met in October. Some people were like, I need that money back. So it's like, I'm just doing the show. I'm not going to, you know, I have no expectation of merch. You know, of course, my manager probably is hearing this. He's like, bring merch. But, it's like we got to pick and choose how we spend our money. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
we're all kind of dealing with, you know, I'm grateful that I have the opportunity to make money. You know, I have plenty of friends that are like freelance single people that are like, please Zoom me because I've been stuck here by myself.
You know, Jim, Steve had mentioned the fact that you can order food while you're watching a show, and food is a big part of you know, your whole career. What would be a good pairing for a Jim Gaffigan show if one were to order something in their car? What do you think would go well with your show?
I think the main ingredient would have to be a lot. You know?
That is a critical ingredient.
Just a lot. Okay.
We're also getting food delivered, so we have to pick things that, as it's delivered, it doesn't go bad. Do you know what I mean?
Because
I'm kind of... You know, you don't, it's kind of like the whole avocado thing. You can buy an avocado, but you better eat it that second it's ripe or you're throwing it away. So I would say at the show, you got to get something that can travel.
Okay.
You know, like
okay.
A burger or a hot dog. Cheese steaks are kind of perfect because they stay warm because of the bun, right?
Yep. Yeah, it's true. That's and it's obviously here. It makes sense. So you're good to go.
All right. So if you're headed to the show, you heard it from the man himself. And you know what? I'm going to give away a pair. Or actually, it's not a pair. It's a four pack.
Yes.
Essentially.
Remember that when you buy your deal, you're buying four tickets.
Yeah. So it's you and three friends, and you take your cards this Saturday at the Citizens Bank parking lot. So we'll take caller 25, and I will give you these tickets right now. 215-263-WMMR, and we'll get you the details after we let Jim go on how you go about purchasing tickets and some of the tips and things you need to know about it.
They're a lot of fun, and we're looking forward to having you in town, and people are going to love it, and your fans are going to come out, and it's again, people are chomping at the bit. It's going to be a great night.
Thanks so much, you guys.
All right, it's good to talk to you, Jim. Thanks, man. Jim Gaffigan, guys, in town this Saturday, the live-in, drive-in. And by the way, tickets available through phillies.com/drive-in. And tomorrow we'll have another pair to give away. And not only that, we'll have a year's supply of Hot Pockets to give away with it as
which
well.
I'm sure he would fully endorse.
He would, absolutely. So we will do that tomorrow. So that's just a heads up on that.
May I point out? That I assume Jim was talking to us from New York, correct?
I knew you were
going to
say
that. All right. And James McAvoy was talking to us from England. Am I nuts?
What is it?
It's unbelievable.
You're saying the phone line
connection. Yeah, like, what is it, though? Like, I feel like this happens a lot.
I don't know, man.
We can only talk to Europeans.
Yeah, that's it. From now on.
Could you imagine?
Only European guests.
I'm assuming.
And it's later there, too. It's easier to get them up on. Yeah. Get them on the phone, too. All right. Did we not do the Bizarre File?
We did not.
Oh, my God.
Now, Bizarre. WMMR presents Bizarre. Kristen and Steve's Bizarre File.
And it's brought to you by HERS. Pick up a specially marked bag of HERS today for a chance to win $10,000 and take your summer to the next level. Full rules and details at summer.hers.com. HERS. Forever good. A man has been jailed after he punched a Picasso painting.
What'd the painting do?
And it was worth over $30 million, by the way.
Oh, my God.
And he ripped it from the wall at the Tate Modern Art Gallery in London. Shaquille Massey admitted criminal damage after attacking the artist's 1944 painting called Bust of a Woman.
What did you call me?
Experts say that the repair would take up to 18 months and cost somewhere in the neighborhood of $400,000 to $500,000. Massey was sentenced to 18 months in prison. The court was told that the attack involved Massey punching the painting several times with a padlock before pulling it off the wall and throwing it on the ground.
How is it that accessible when it's that expensive a painting?
Dude, when you go to some galleries, they're just... I mean, works by Rembrandt, they're right there. That's why they have security in each room.
Yeah, well, they're supposed to intercede, right?
Yeah, this guy managed to get
in. Hey, you, stop punching that Rembrandt.
A few punches. So during sentencing, the judge said that Massey's actions were nothing more than an attempt to seek notoriety and 5 minutes of fame. Upon his arrest, Massey told people, police his actions were a performance.
Ah.
That'll help out.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Performance art.
Two men have been arrested, and another man is wanted in connection with the early Sunday theft of a wooden cow cutout. The cutout, covered in a painting of St. Johnsonville's Kaiser House...
I must have that.
...has since been reunited to the Kaiser House, undamaged, arrested, and charged with misdemeanors in the case of Jamie M. Lambert and Casey L. Batista. The investigation that led to the stolen cow cutout began at 4 a.m. Two sheriff's deputies were on patrol... Witnessed three men running across the street while carrying a large item from the area of the Kaiser House. Deputies pursued where they recovered the cutout from a bedroom there. Batista and Lambert were taken into custody and charged.
So they brought the cutout of the cow into the bedroom?
Yeah.
What were they planning on doing?
I don't know. They were 20 and 21 years old, so I think alcohol was probably a factor.
More than likely.
A naked man has decided that car wash would be the perfect place for a late-night shower. In video recorded on August 16th, the man is seen receiving a high-pressure hose down from a friend in one of the washing bays. So, I mean, this is the, you spray your car with this. This hurts. This dude was naked. The owner of the car wash shared the footage on their Facebook page and wished the man a speedy recovery. They said, we had a great weekend of car washing at Parkland's Car Wash until our new touchless storm automatic. With our new touchless storm automatic, we even had a man versus machine incident. It remains unclear why the man decided to bathe in the car wash
or if he realized that there were cameras installed. So who knows?
They are intense, but if you talk about like a high pressure washer, a power washer, have you ever had a stream from one of those touch you?
Oh yeah.
Oh my God.
That's why I'm saying this dude probably was in pain after this. It's normal to ask for a vacuum cleaner on your wedding registry, but this is a bit excessive. A couple from Austin, Texas have created a very niche wedding registry, and they are asking only for vacuums. The bride-to-be, Meg Hahn, put together the unique registry on the wedding platform, The Knot, to surprise her vacuum connoisseur fiancé, Brandon Armburster.
He's a vacuum connoisseur?
Yeah, or Armburster, that's his name. It's Brandon Armburster. Oh, Brewster.
Brewster, okay. Yeah.
He says he loves the instant gratification he gets from vacuuming and has since he was a child. He also owns 7 robot vacuums to keep his home free of dust and debris. They registered for 750 vacuum cleaners.
He sounds like an imbecile.
Hahn says the registry was really created as a joke, and they do not want friends to feel obligated to buy them vacuums, but he does love vacuum cleaners. And let's end with let's do one more story. What the hell is this one? I'm trying to find one that is good to end on here. You know, I never have an exact way I want to go out the bizarre file. I just kind of...
You go with the flow.
Yeah, I do. How about this? We'll end with a nice story.
All right.
Bizarre, but interesting. A North Georgia fourth grader is soaring to new heights, becoming the youngest person to solo pilot a hot air balloon. Fourth grader.
Wow.
He's 9 years old. His name is TJ Head. And on July 10th, when the Cleveland, Georgia boy was still 8, he soared 400 feet into the air. It's part of the family business. His dad, Tarp, that's his dad's first name, Tarp.
Tarp?
Has been piloting balloons himself for 45 years.
I want you to fly a balloon.
He's done quite a bit of preparation for
you
years.
You listen to Papa Tarp.
Tarp said, describing how they built him a scale model remote-controlled hot air balloon. During that summer flight, Head had traveled about... So that means this guy's name is
Tarphead. No.
Okay.
Okay, yeah.
During that summer flight, Head traveled about a mile and a half in 20 minutes on his first solo flight.
Did I hear you right? Did you say your name is Tarphead?
He said, I saw the sun setting. I saw a lot of cows. My favorite thing was probably seeing the back of Yona Mountain. And when he landed...
Yeah, who wouldn't be impressed?
He had a call to make to Bobby Bradley, who broke the record at 9 years old back in 2011 in New Mexico. He said, when I was 4, I said that I would beat his record. And he did.
I beat you.
And so he called him and told him
you
that.
You loser!
And he congratulated him. And there you go. That's what I have in the bizarre file. Tarphead. We're going to take a break and come back, and we'll see if you've been paying attention, because we're going to ask a question about today's show. It's the lesson question. We'll do trash and music news, too. Stay put.
Like the Preston and Steve Show podcast? Check out MMR's other audio on demand at WMMR.com or on the MMR mobile app.
Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro. Get personalized deals on the products you buy most and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy, and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors.
Back with more of the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
We have done everything. Nick, I don't have the lesson.
Yeah,
questions.
The printer wasn't working properly, so I have them if you want them.
All right, so let's see here. We're going to give away a digital download of the gripping psychological thriller, The Vanished, with Anne Heche and Thomas Jane. Nick, what do you want to ask?
How did Antonio Banderas go about curing himself from coronavirus?
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. That process was mentioned twice on the show.
Sure was.
At a later point. 215-263-WMMR. Okay. How did Antonio Banderas, is his birthday today? No.
He had coronavirus.
He survived corona. Yes. And then we found out he did it by doing this. 215-263-WMMR. Let's see if you know the answer. And while you're calling in, we're going to do the trash.
The trash business is a gold
mine.
93.3 WMMR with Preston and Steve's Hollywood Trash.
Brought to you by Cinch. They're a propane tank home delivery service that brings propane right to your doorstep. You can place your order at cinch.com. What's happening this morning, Steve?
Well, as you said earlier, Preston, Halle Berry has filed a request to act as her own lawyer in her divorce from ex Olivier Martinez. Berry says, despite what people are saying, she has been rigorously studying episodes of Matlock.
No. Oh, my God.
56-year-old Brad Pitt is being linked to German model 21-year-old Nicole Poderoski after they were photographed together. Pitt has reportedly told friends that while there is a bit of a language barrier, he's completely able to understand her vagina.
Oh, my God.
And finally, Tom Cruise exiting his private black helicopter after arriving at Battersea Heliport in London on Thursday. Cruise wore a COVID mask to remain safe and then drove an exploding double-decker bus into the Thames. And that's your Hollywood Trash.
All right. We shall see if someone knows the answer to this question. How did Antonio Banderas cure his COVID-19 positive? He had COVID-19. 215-263-WMMR. I'm going to go to Joe. Hey, Joe, how you doing?
What's up, guys? Gadzooks.
Gadzooks. All right, so how did he cure COVID?
Shoving ginger up his butt?
Yeah, it's called figging, but yes. Yep, hang on. I almost said, look, we'll take the description or the actual term for it, but yes, it's figging, which is, yeah. Putting ginger in your butt.
That's what you do.
All right, so he got it right, and we're going to give him a digital download of the gripping psychological thriller, The Vanish, starring Han Heche and Thomas Jane, and it's a family vacation that takes a terrifying turn where two parents discover their young daughter has vanished without a trace. Own it or rent it today on digital, and it's rated R from Paramount Pictures.
Now, Preston and Steve's Music View on 93.3 WMMR.
All right, it is brought to you by CherryHillMitsubishi.com. You want to go there because they're the home of the $1 down deal, where you could be driving a new or used vehicle today with just $1 down. CherryHillMitsubishi.com. Chris Cornell's widow, Vicky, turned to social media yesterday to clarify the misinformation that is spreading about the recent vandalization of Cornell's statue outside of the Museum of Pop Culture in Seattle. Although people have blamed rioters and also Save the Children protesters, Vicky said that it is untrue. She wrote in part, a few days prior to the vandalism, someone wrote in sidewalk chalk, Save the Children in front of the statue. It rained the night before. Consequently, by Thursday morning when the vandalism occurred, much of the chalk writing was gone, leaving only the words children. She added that the accounts who have been spreading the false narrative also liked posts that encouraged vandalism. Vicky wrote, we would appreciate it if those accounts would stop spreading misinformation and
stuff.
Well, I don't. This has got to be a typo. Fomenting?
Yeah, no, fomenting. Yeah.
Okay, I was thinking fomenting.
Oh, okay. What do they write?
All right, anyway, they wrote F-O-M-E-N-T-I-N-G?
Yeah.
Fomenting?
Yeah.
I don't know what that means.
Creating, encouraging.
Okay. Fomenting discord. See, you learn stuff from time to time. I do, anyway. As it tarnishes Chris's legacy, masks the truth, and hurts those who Chris loved as well as Chris's true fans.
It's the tar-like residue on a duck's anus, Preston.
Ah. The statue was vandalized August 20th with white paint.
Okay, so it was splattered. I had not heard about this vandalism. Okay.
Yeah. Huh. Yep. Access TV has tapped Hailstorm's Lizzie Hale to host the third season of the network's ongoing series, A Year in Music. And the new season will debut on Sunday, October 4th, 9:30 p.m. Season 3 features 12 new episodes that will take a look back in 2001, 1998, 2008, and 1986, among other standout years. This is her first hosting gig. She said, hosting A Year in Music is a dream come true for me as it allows me to both discuss and learn about music's impact on history and then share that knowledge with music lovers across the world. So she's excited about it. Very cool. Pretty Reckless singer Taylor Momsen has opened up about the band's new album, Death by Rock and Roll. In an interview, Momsen spoke on what it was like to take on co-production duties with guitarist Ben Phillips and Jonathan Wyman. She said, I think as a songwriter, at least for me, when I write a song, I hear it all in my head. So
I think the job of a producer, at least for our band, has always been to help the artist guide what they're hearing in their head and somehow figure out how to make that come out of the speakers. She said, I hear everything. So then it's just, how do you physically make that happen? And that's always a challenge. We pretty much just try everything, trial and error. Until you get to a place where it starts to feel good, and then you expound on that.
So you're talking about death by rock and roll, and I had a dream the other night, and I don't know if this is a precognition, you know, where I'm looking into the future, but where rock starts to come back in. Okay. Like, rock was becoming more a thing, and I think, in general, when you see stuff like this, and, you know, when, as we said before, things tend to go in waves, you know, people like that, And what they're doing, and these women who are rocking so hard, I think that's part of the turnaround. Yeah. I'm hoping it is. I'm just lying to myself.
She said, so I think in a lot of ways it felt like a real natural progression because it's not something that I didn't do before. I just didn't have the weight of that title, I guess, if that makes any sense. So Death by Rock and Roll will be released early next year. So they've held off on releasing that. AC/DC's Angus Young has long been one of rock's most iconic performers and is legendary for losing himself once he gets into the zone on stage. During a recent chat with Total Guitar, he spoke frankly about his metamorphosis once the lights go down and the music starts, revealing, I'm on my own little cloud. Adrenaline takes over. It's like when you take off in an airplane. It's exhilarating. When you're firing well, it's the best feeling in the world. And when it goes wrong, it's like someone shoved a red-hot poker up your backside.
Huh.
But for me, the shows go so quickly. You're on and you're off, and then you have to go back to how you are as a person. That's the hard part, because once you go into being the schoolboy, it's pretty hard to come off it. And I'm like two different people, sometimes three. When pressed about who the third person might be, he said, that's what I'm trying to figure out. I've been up there playing and thinking, what are those feet doing? I'm watching them to see which way they want to go. That's all I ever do, follow the feet and the guitar. The duck walk comes naturally. When I put on the uniform and the legs start shaking, I'm ready, he says.
So when you're playing drums, you get into the zone, you get lost in them if you're in a zone?
Yeah.
So it's like with him with the guitar?
Yeah, you don't think about it.
Do you think a tambourine player ever gets lost in the...
Probably.
I think they've always been lost, to be honest.
Into a tambourine solo?
Yep, it happens. You just, the jingle jangle, man, it gets you.
It seems to be one of those instruments that does not generate that kind of euphoria.
Oh, you don't know. You don't know.
Like a triangle.
Set for release on what would have been John Lennon's 80th birthday is the new solo compilation called Gimme Some Truth. The set, which is executive produced by Yoko Ono and produced by Sean Lennon, features 36 songs handpicked by Yoko and Sean.
She just covered a Billy Joel song.
Oh, my God.
It's
so
phenomenal.
Do you want to grab? All right, Marissa's going to grab
it. Yeah, if you grab that, it's amazing.
I mean, she totally redeemed herself from that last performance.
All right, we'll get that over. With the tunes completely remixed from scratch, using brand new transfers of the original multi-tracks cleaned up to the highest possible sonic quality. After weeks of painstaking preparation, the final mixes and effects were completed using only vintage analog equipment and effects at Henson Recording Studios in Los Angeles and then mastered in analog at Abbey Road Studios by Alex Wharton in order to ensure the most beautiful and authentic sound quality possible. Now, the collection will come with a newly compiled 124-page book of lyrics and photos.
And a Metallica violin.
According to the album's press release, the book tells the story of all 36 songs in John and Yoko's words, and the words of those who worked alongside them through archival and brand new interviews, accompanied by hundreds of previously unseen photographs, Polaroids, movie still frames, letters, lyric sheets, tape boxes, and artworks and memorabilia from the Lennon Ono archives. So,
what would you expect to pay for this amazing package?
That will be coming out on December 4th, I believe. No, December 7th is his birthday. Do we have it?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is... Yoko Ono covering Billy Joel's Big Shot.
Oh,
impressive.
Yeah. It's so good. Yeah. Because the thing is that sometimes you can either, I would call that paying homage to the source material.
Sure, sure. Yeah, you don't want to stray too far because yeah. then you're making it, you know, too much of your own. I mean, often
kind of a mockery.
Billy Joel wrote that,
right?
And he wanted it a certain way. So
she's not doing like a Billy Joel impression. She's saying true to who she is.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. While still paying homage,
right,
to the source material.
It's difficult to navigate that line.
Appreciate that. All right, so we're going to take a break, and when we return, that's it in music news, by the way. We'll come back in a moment, and we'll get the letter of the day for the word of the week, and Pierre Robert. Stay with us.
93.3 WMMR presents Jackson's Local Shots Artist of the Month, Nick Perry and the Underground Thieves. Celebrating our area's best talent. Bringing it to you on air, online, and in the community. Hear and see more at WMMR.com. Keyword, local shots. Nick Perry and the Underground Thieves. Jackson's Local Shots Artist of the Month. Sponsored by Family and Company Jewelers. Find a band that rocks her world at Family. 93.3 WMMR. Everything that rocks.
A full program today coming to a close on this fine Thursday afternoon. So that means I have a lot of people to thank, and I want to do that very thing. We had our lead interview was outstanding. James McAvoy.
Yeah.
Amazing actor, super nice guy, considers Philadelphia to be his second home. He's got a home here that he comes back, and he hasn't visited since last September.
He's from Scotland, and he speaks English fluently.
Yes. What a talent.
Amazing.
Yeah. Listen, he speaks Delco, man.
Yes, he does.
He referenced Delco this morning. Casey was so excited.
I mean, that's pretty wild. Yeah. He's
gonna
proud of it.
He's going to send us a picture of him in his Delco hat, by the way. So James McAvoy promoting Give and Go Athletics, and they help out to promote, obviously, athletics and health, human development, and informal learning as well to people in need. And you can check out their website at giveandgoathletics.org. We also had actor William Sadler.
Yeah.
He was great. He is in the next Bill and Ted movie, Bill and Ted Face the Music. He plays the Grim Reaper, Death. He's hilarious in that movie. Jim Gaffigan.
Yay!
He's on the show. And Jim has the live-in drive-in this Saturday, Citizens Bank Park, holding out that the weather's going to be good. And also Chris Porter, live streaming from San Francisco Friday at 10 p.m., his show. And you can get tickets at RushTix.com. Pierre is here. He's checking his glasses, making sure everything's clean and tidy and ready to go for his program today.
That's very orange and black. Is this a Flyers thing, I assume?
Of course.
No?
No.
All right.
I had one clean pair of shorts left, which were orange.
I see.
And then I happened to have orange high-top Chucks.
I thought you were celebrating the overtime win yesterday.
The boys in blue are always to be celebrated, however.
I scared my dog, by the way, when they scored that goal.
Meyer scored the goal, and
I was like, yes! Yes! And my dog was like, he thought I was yelling at him.
Myers did that, I flipped.
Right?
I flipped when Myers did that, man. I flipped and did a triple flip.
I did a split, man.
I stripped when he flipped.
Is that a split flip?
It's a split flip, man. We call it an SF.
Okay.
Yes, SF.
So you're doing good?
Yes, thank you.
All right, should we do the letter of the day?
Let's get on with it.
Preston and Steve on 93.3 WMMR.
Now, the daily letter.
Let's get on with it. All right, the Preston and Steve show is brought to you today by the letter.
A is in amazing.
All right, we have one more letter to go after that A today. And we have a Metallica and San Francisco Symphony S&M2 box set and custom Metallica S&M2 logoed violin, which is one of only 100 that were made. The live album and video contains the September 6th and 8th shows at San Francisco's Chase Center to be released this Friday, tomorrow. Pre-orders happening now. Box set contains limited edition 4LP color vinyl, exclusive photo book, 2 CDs, Blu-ray, sheet music, 5 guitar picks, poster, and download card. You can go to WMMR.com for the track listing and the details. So we give that away tomorrow, which is wonderful. You have some cool stuff planned today?
I do.
Excellent.
I've got Workforce Blocks of the Kinks. I've got Stevie Ray Vaughan. And to please your Buffett-loving heart, Rush.
Yeah! Alex Lifeson's birthday today.
Yeah, that's correct.
All right. Excellent. I'm looking forward to that.
All right, let me thank the sponsors. Preston and Steve Show has been brought to you today by Dunkin', the official coffee of the Preston and Steve Show. Also brought to you by HERS, the official chip taking your summer to the next level, and Hyundai City Park. Get ready for a whole lot of Sonata. Shop now and save during the summer sell-off at HyundaiCity.com. Tomorrow on our program, we have a couple of things to mention. Billy Zabka.
Billy nice. Zabka.
Will be joining us.
He's awesome.
Yeah. He's been in so many good things.
Yeah, he was a great interview the last time we had him.
He was excellent. He wouldn't leave until he was able to say,
Screw you, Melon.
Get
her done.
No, not get her done. No mercy, whatever. Yeah. From
I don't leave till I say get her done.
It was...
Sweep the leg?
No, it wasn't sweep the leg. No. Anyway, it was something no mercy. But anyhow, we'll ask him about it tomorrow.
Yes.
Ian LaPerriere is going to be joining us. And comedian Rachel Feinstein and also the lead singer of Seether, Sean Morgan, is getting in touch with us.
Wow, that's cool.
Busy day tomorrow. That's it. We're done. Rage on. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow, gang. Bye-bye.
The Preston and Steve love you, hate you line.
You can eat every food with your fingers. You can eat soup with your fingers. You can eat peas with your fingers. You can eat lima beans. You can eat broccoli. You can even eat burritos, tacos. I mean, the list goes on and on. Kathy, you have no f***ing idea what you're talking about.
Next message.
Hey, guys. Smiley face, pink heart, wink emoji, growing heart, angel wings, upside down face, eggplant, huggy emoji. I got no idea what the f*** I just said.
Next message.
Hey, asshole. Yeah, you with the silver SUV with the giant Notre Dame sticker on the back window. You come on ass down my f***ing neighborhood one more time, and your ass is going to jail.
The Preston and Steve Love You, Hate You line.
Call 484-434-1333.
MMR rocks.
Brought to you by DellToyota.com and DellChevrolet.com.
Jack, sell them for less.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.